Bush and Henry Kissinger were sent off to the world court. Their plans for global domination were preemptively cut short. Their weapons of mass destruction.
This is the Quality News Network. In Chicago, President Bush held a press conference addressing questions about North Korea, Iran, and Iraq. He said that with our new anti-ballistic systems, the United States had a reasonable chance of shooting down the long-range missile North Korea fired earlier this week if it had not failed. Japan is pushing for a UN Security Council vote tomorrow to place sanctions against North Korea's missile program. This comes despite opposition from veto-wielding members China and Russia. In New York, the FBI and Homeland Security Department announced they have disrupted a terrorist network with plans to target the tunnels under the Hudson River. The key suspect was arrested by Lebanese authorities after FBI monitoring of internet chat rooms led to a break in the investigation. Two more suspects are also in custody abroad but have not been charged, according to the FBI. London is marking the one-year anniversary of the suicide terror attacks that killed 52 people. The city's police chief says that more attacks are actively being planned and that the terrorism threat has palpably increased in Britain. In Jerusalem, for the first time since the nearly two-week military incursion into the Gaza Strip began, a top Israeli official indicated that Israel may be willing to trade Palestinian prisoners for the captured 19-year-old Israeli soldier. In and around Baghdad, four bomb attacks on Sunni and Shiite mosques killed 11 worshippers today. At least 55 were injured. A civil rights group says that white supremacists are joining the U.S. military to receive the world's best combat training. The Southern Poverty Law Center says relaxed recruiting standards have made it easier for such members to join. In Mexico, following the razor-thin victory of the conservative presidential candidate, there are fears of possible violence this weekend. His liberal opponent, who campaigned as the people's champion, is calling for his supporters to take to the streets and protest the election results. Italian news agencies are reporting that a judge has ordered Italy's former prime minister to stand trial. He is accused of fraud in connection with the sale of television rights at his family's media company. The Space Shuttle Discovery crew began transferring thousands of pounds of supplies to the International Space Station. Their mission will now be 13 days. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In June, payrolls went up by 121,000 workers, according to the Labor Department. The report also shows that the unemployment rate remained at 4.6%. In Washington on Monday, Henry Paulson, the former head of the Wall Street investment firm Goldman Sachs, will be sworn in as the new Treasury Secretary. In Detroit, GM's board of directors voted today to start exploratory discussions on a possible alliance with Nissan and Renault. The idea came from investor Kirk Kerkorian, who owns the largest stake in GM. A class action lawsuit has been filed against Singular Wireless on behalf of more than 20 million AT&T customers. They are accusing the company of nickel and diming them to pay transfer fees, sign new contracts, and buy new phones after the merger, which they say resulted in degraded service. Verizon Communications will be leaving the phone book business by the end of this year, according to a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission today. Although the organic food market only makes up 2.5% of the nation's food market, demand is now outpacing supply. New statistics show that sales of organic food are growing between 15 and 21% each year. Light sweet crude settled at $74.09 a barrel today, and near the close of Wall Street, the Dow is down 134 points, the NASDAQ is down 25 points, the S&P 500 down 9. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Okay! Don't you!
South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We have made it to the end of another week, leading me to feel sort of grief-stricken, as usual. But, you know, we'll have a good time tonight. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course. This is the little dust-up that we call Head On. And we've got lots of places to go, lots of things to talk about, and as we say growing up, cuss and discuss as we go through the evening. Last night, we wound up the program. We wound up the program with what can only be described as something bizarre, utterly, unquestionably bizarre. Namely, the weird little monologue by the weird little president pro tem of the Senate, Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, that crazed little Republican who swore he was never coming back to the Senate if he didn't get his bridge to nowhere. I want a $57 million bridge, and I don't know if I'm going to come back without it. Well, he came back long enough to put the screws to ostensibly this operation, or make us some sort of servile wraiths to the big telecoms. And, you know, for that matter, you know, everybody who does content on the Internet. So... But that's where we left off last night. I want to pick up with some more audio, namely because I heard it discussed and saw it discussed in the headonradionetwork.com chat room, which, by the way, if you are not participating in, if you're listening to the show live, you're really missing out on a lot of fun. So headonradionetwork.com in the chat room, it's easy to get into, and it's there at my kind of price, namely free. Go on by. And, you know, given the amount of programming we have on the network, if you're listening to the show in a recorded version, odds are if you go by the chat room whenever you're listening, there might be somebody there. We start programming at 2 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern Time with Mark Levine. Then Guy James, then Bruce Birch, then me. So there's people in the chat room. Oh gosh, all the way up to about 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern. So jump on in, it's fine. And if you want to participate in a more static form, if you will, there are message boards at headonradio.com. I know it's a little confusing, but. That was the site that I put up before we became a network. Headonradio.com, message boards there, and some free-for-alls, and some good fun, and some pretty fierce debate from time to time. But if you've got a lot of links, or you want to post extended chunks of articles that you think people ought to read, you can do that there. And again, at the right price, free. So we've got all that. Now, Agnes, dear, I need you to I need you to give me a hand here, if you wouldn't mind, please. Now, like I said, we started off with Ted Stevens, or we ended with Ted Stevens last night, and that was just some squirrely Republican craziness. I think it's time to go to Republican meanness, and frankly, I include the, you know, when I talk about Republicans, I include the media. And by that, I mean the interview between Nora O'Donnell sitting in at MSNBC and Cindy Sheehan. Now, Cindy Sheehan, anytime, you know, this woman doesn't scream. She doesn't tear at her hair. She doesn't run around the room. She's quiet. She really appears to be a peaceful person. Nora O'Donnell, on the other hand, I'm trying to think of which Simpsons, which Simpsons character she reminds me of. Maybe the bus... the bus. Okay, it's the bus driver on South Park that Nora O'Donnell reminds me of, the one with the bird's nest in her hair. You know, just mean, hateful, nasty, and spiteful. Most, and I'll take my chances here. Most talk programs, because of formatic constraints and things like that, would not be able to play you just the entire interview. I'm going to do that. Because it doesn't take up a whole lot of time, and you deserve to hear what Republican meanness in the media, you know, I guess Nora O'Donnell, you know, if you ask the Reverend Donald Wildman about the liberal media, I guess Nora O'Donnell is part of it, but don't expect that from me, because I'm not acid-based, I'm reality-based. And this woman is just nasty and hateful and spiteful. And, you know, for those of you who are followers of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, you know, the real Jesus, not the institutionalized one that you find everybody talking about but not living like, listen and see if you don't hear Christian spirit in the voice of Cindy Sheehan. And see by comparison who you would compare Nora O'Donnell with. Agnes, would you? And this is the whole thing.
Cindy Sheehan is America's most outspoken anti-war activist. But does she speak for America or just the fringes? She's called President Bush the biggest terrorist in the world. And she stood side by side with socialist dictator Hugo Chavez in Venezuela.
Now pause it, please,
now she
dear.
Begins
pause
a two-month
it.
Hunger strike to get the...
And stood side by side with socialist dictator Hugo Chavez. Is there any evidence out there to suggest that Hugo Chavez is a dictator? And is there any evidence out there to suggest that him being a socialist, if in fact he is, I mean, he's certainly participating in a very capitalist system. I guess he's a socialist because he did some land reforming and gave peasants some land so they could farm it and eat. You know, the man talks a lot about Christian principles and appears to live them. But, no, just right off the bat, that nasty witch Nora O'Donnell tells you where she's coming from, and stood side by side
with socialist dictator Hugo Chavez.
She makes me sick, but I'm going to see if I can just let it go through. Oh, and by the way, if you haven't watched the video yet, you know, this was all about announcing Cindy Sheehan's hunger strike to end the war, which is a totally legitimate tool in nonviolent circles, right? Did you notice how, if you've seen it, if you haven't, I'll tell you, MSNBC fonted this thing with a banner underneath her that said, "Starving for Attention." My hand to God, they did. I heard conversation on Bruce's program just a little bit ago, talking about how these right-wing hate freaks are just operating in the sunshine and think that they won't be called on anything. By God, if nowhere else on the Head On Radio Network, we will call these sleazy gas bags on their bug spray. We will call them on it. And when you font Cindy Sheehan with "Starving for Attention," I think it's pretty clear where MSNBC's editorial policy lies. Crank it up again there, would you please, Agnes?
American people to join her mission to end the war. Welcome to Hardball, Cindy. Let me begin by asking you, Americans may hate the war, but they don't necessarily hate the president.
Yes, we do.
How do you expect to get change by going around the world and trashing the president of the United States?
Actually, I don't hate the president either. And I don't trash the president. I trash the president's foreign policy, which is fundamentally and inherently wrong and immoral. And I don't tell people around the world anything that they don't know.
But you called him the biggest terrorist in the world, so you are trashing the president.
Well, he's
not. Wait. I want to. We've got to have a little honesty about this. Did you hear the question? So you called him the biggest terrorist in the world, so you are trashing the president. So if she referred to him as 60 years old and slightly graying and married to a woman named Laura, that would be trashing the president, too, because he is the biggest terrorist in the world. 15 Saudis and a few other assorted whomevers from the Middle East with box cutters got lucky. I mean, really got lucky, and got lucky as a direct result of a disinterested, incurious, negligent, criminally negligent, grossly, willfully, wantonly, recklessly negligent administration, and managed to take down a couple of buildings and put a hole in the Pentagon, if you buy the story. And killed 3,000 people. George Bush. Well, the numbers are something like 150,000 innocents dead in Iraq now, more than half of whom are women and children. How do you define terrorism? Would it be better if she just called him an out-and-out killer? I'm sorry, I did it again. You go back to it, please, Agnes. Start it, please, dear.
An extreme position, because there are very few members of Congress,
members
of America, out protesting, riding their congresspeople, and changing policy.
And more, quite frankly, do you see members of Congress, and you claim not to be in the fringes, to not be an extremist, and yet what members of Congress support you and your policy?
Well, really on both sides of the aisle. We have Ron Paul and Walter Jones, who are Republicans, who are outspoken critics of George Bush's policies. We have many on the other side, such as John Conyers, Charlie Rangel.
And in the Senate?
In the Senate, well, we would have many supporters in the Senate,
who?
Too.
Who?
John Kerry.
John Kerry supports an immediate withdrawal from Iraq. Did he tell you that?
His office is working on starting a withdrawal as soon as possible to have the troops come by the end of the year.
Okay, please pause it again, dear.
I have talked to his office about that, and that's something...
Okay, a word about the United States Senate. If not a single soul in the United States Senate supported an immediate withdrawal from Iraq, I would not be surprised. Because after all, what was it, just a few months ago? Just a few bare months ago, maybe a year, several members of the Senate, including a significant number of the same Senate Republicans who could not bring themselves to move to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act, couldn't move themselves to sign off on an apology for not standing up against lynching. Somehow or another, I wish they were, but they're not. Somehow or another, I don't expect the United States Senate to be out there on the cutting forefront of getting it right. The Senate is rather, shall we be generous and say, ponderous? Yes, ponderous. I like ponderous. The Senate bows down and kisses the feet of people like Alberto Gonzalez and John Ashcroft and Samuel Alito and John Roberts, Democrats and Republicans alike. So, Ms. O'Donnell doesn't exactly make her case by saying that the Senate's not out there marching in the streets demanding an end to the war. No, because the Senate, in large measure, abdicated its rights with regard to the waging of warfare when they passed the "Gee, George, you gotta have what you, you know." I mean, they could have all stood up and sung a parody version of "You Say You Want a Revolution" by the Beatles, only replace revolution with a war in Iraq. I mean, you can hear John Kerry. "You say you want a war in Iraq. Well, you know, I was for it before I was against it."
But
you get the idea. Back to it, please, dear.
He's trying to push in the Senate.
Well, in fact, the bill that Senator Kerry has proposed went down in flames in the Senate.
In Vietnam, there was only a few senators at first, and then it turned around.
Let me challenge you on this, Cindy, because what you're calling for is, in fact, an extreme position, because there are very few members of Congress who support immediate withdrawal.
Time out.
You would, if you could.
I'm sorry. We can't get through this without me interrupting it. What you're calling for, Cindy, is an extreme position. Can we talk? Is it extreme for Cindy Sheehan to want or not want that uniformed messenger of death to show up on another's porch? Another mother's porch. To stand there all spit and polished with white gloves on and rap soundly at the door. To have Mama, who carried the child in her womb and raised him up, answer that door so he can explain, "Madam, your son has died for freedom." Is it extreme for Cindy Sheehan to not want to have happen to another mother what happened to her? You know, this is just cheesy, sleazy, ugly, yellow, Hurstian journalism, if you dare call it journalism. You know, what was the famous, was it Hearst or was it Pulitzer that sent a telegram from New York to Havana, "You get me the pictures, I'll supply the war"? I mean, it's not like this is the first time that there's been a pro. No. And I'm resisting the impulse to drag out Mark Twain's The War Prayer and read it again. You've all read it. It appeals to my little performance art streak, but I won't do it. But I mean, what you're advocating, Cindy, is really an extreme position, because we all like to have stories about Marines and soldiers and sailors and little Air Force boys that have had their heads chopped off or blown off or their eyes gouged out. That's not extreme, Cindy. You're the extreme one. Peace is extreme. God, I hate her. Play the thing, Agnes.
Pick up all our troops and take them home tomorrow, if you could, within your power. There is no one in the United States Congress, Democrat, Republican, or Independent, who would do that.
Actually, there are many members. There's an out-of-Iraq Congress that has 70 members that are calling for an immediate withdrawal. And we can't fly planes over tomorrow.
Right.
You know, it would take a few months, and it has to be as safe for our soldiers and as safe for the Iraqi people as possible, but it has to be as soon as possible.
You speak very passionately about your cause. You lost a son in Iraq. We honor his service and sacrifice. But you've been traveling the world, Scotland, Spain, Venezuela, Ireland, Australia, Austria.
Commie nations.
How does that help the cause when, again, you're around the world mm-hmm. trashing the president, calling him a
Agnes.
Terrorist, calling him worse than Osama bin Laden? How do you honestly...
How does that help the cause? Well, Nora, you darn dummy. It helps the cause because the more pressure that is brought to bear on that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout who is occupying the people's house at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the more likely it is that someday, maybe some mother's son won't die. But I'm beating on the obvious. I know I am. But I've listened to this interview about a dozen times today because you know, I mean, we do the show about the same time, and so I didn't get to see it live, and it's probably just as good because, you know, my father doesn't need me screaming in the living room right now. It's not good for him. Or I might try to strangle myself with his oxygen tube or something, because that's what this does to me. I loathe Nora O'Donnell. I loathe Chris Matthews. Then, you know, Bullwinkle's baby sister, Crosby. Is she kin to Bing? I don't know. Not with that voice, she's not. But at any rate, how does that help the cause? The more people that oppose the war, the less likely it is, among other things, that this thing can go on ad infinitum like they want it to. And more importantly, the less likely it is that they get to start the next one. But, you know, that's me and I'm nuts, and we're going back to the clip.
Expect to affect change with that those types of remarks.
Well, it's really important, too, that the people in the world know that there are Americans on their side. Because as anti-Bush sentiment goes up in the world, anti-American sentiment goes up also. And people, I've had hundreds of people around the world tell me, before you, we thought all Americans supported George Bush. And it's important for us, people of different countries in different borders, to reach out to one another, to work to force our leaders to solve problems peacefully. And this is
so
really important.
Why don't stand side by side by Hugo Chavez in Venezuela? Why do that? I mean, it sounds like that. Would you rather live under Hugo Chavez than George Bush?
No, stop this. Stop this.
Yes?
Would you rather live under Hugo Chavez?
Well, let's see, Nora. You twit. That took courage. When people get sick in Hugo Chavez's country, honey, they can go to the doctor. And they don't have to get crushed. And there's not a Congress there that says that they can't get rid of their bills if they have crushing medical debt. Hugo Chavez's people have more oil under their dirt than the entire Middle East has under its. And, you know, how right-wing is this? Oh, what's the line from Don Henley's Dirty Laundry? The bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. It's interesting when people die. Give us dirty laundry. Well, you know, this bubblehead, let's see, bleach blonde, 2 syllables. Bubble-headed brunette comes on at 5. Oh, yep, it scans. But it's the same dirty daggum trick. It's the same filthy trick.
Well, you stood next to Hugo Chavez. That must mean you don't love America. Why do you want to live in Venezuela with those brown people?
Back to her.
You know, Hugo Chavez is not a dictator like you introduced him. He's been democratically elected 8 times, and he's not anti-American.
He's democratically elected.
Yeah, hold on a second.
Can you take that back just a hair, Agnes?
He's not anti-American. What was that? He has helped the poor people.
Hugo Chavez and George Bush?
Yes. You know,
those types of remarks.
Well, it's really important, too, that the people in the world know that there are Americans
what
on their
side. What is it she's about to say about not American democratically elected?
In the world, anti-American sentiment goes up also. And people, I've had hundreds of people around the world tell me, before you, we thought all Americans supported George Bush. And it's important for us, people of different countries in different borders, to reach out to one another, to work to force our leaders to solve problems peacefully. And this is really important.
Why don't stand side by side by Hugo Chavez in Venezuela? Why do that? I mean, it sounds like that. Would you rather live under Hugo Chavez than George Bush?
Yes. You know, Hugo Chavez is not a dictator like you introduced him. He's been democratically elected 8 times, and he's not anti-American.
He's democratically elected.
Yeah, hold on a second.
Pause then. I want to fix.
He is not anti-American. He has helped the poor people of America.
What is she saying? Cindy Sheehan says he was democratically elected 8 times, and Nora O'Donnell says, but not like American democratically elected? Is that what it is? I mean, I'm, this is not rhetorical. I honestly can't understand what she's saying. Yeah, I know, Bob, shut up. Maybe you'd understand. But save it. Like I said, I've listened to this several times today, and I still can't make out what she is saying. The closest I can get, and I understand this is a little bit like the Steve Miller Band and wondering if he's singing Bingo Jed Had a Light On instead of Big Old Jet Airliner, but is she saying not like American democratically elected? Does Nora O'Donnell live so far up in the stratosphere that she doesn't know that the Bush administration tried its best to engineer a coup to get rid of Hugo Chavez? Why? Why? Some would argue for the same reason that they invaded Iraq, because he was screwing with the oil, because Hugo Chavez came into power and said, look, you know, this deal where we only get 20% or 10% of the profits from our oil isn't fair to the Venezuelan people. And Exxon and all the... What? I got a bone in my throat. What? Not like American democratically elected. I guess this means that ES and S and Diebold and Sequoia and haven't made it to Venezuela. Is that it? Am I to understand that what Nora O'Donnell means by not like American democratically elected, what that means is that people still go to the polls and take a pen or a pencil and scratch a not necessarily overtly artistic X in a box next to a name, and they put it in another box, and that box has a lock on it, and when voting closes, they take the box with the lock on it to another place, and they put all, and they count, and look, it's one for Hugo Chavez, and look, it's one for the right-wing freak that the Bolsheviks want, and oh, look, it's a landslide for Hugo Chavez, because they counted all the damn votes! Is that what Nora O'Donnell means when she says not like American democratically elected? Is that what that means? Okay, let's finish this up, Agnes.
He has sent aid to New Orleans. He has sold heating oil to disadvantaged people in America, in the United States of America, at low cost. And the people of this country love him. And for us to say that we have some kind of influence over Venezuelan policy is wrong. The people of Venezuela have elected him overwhelmingly 8 times, and it's his country, and it's their country, and they should have the leader that they deserve.
All right, Cindy Sheehan. Thank you.
Thank you. Cindy Sheehan never raised her... And if you watch the video, and I found it over at Crooks and Liars. No, I found it at Media Matters, our good friend Lottie. One of the mods in the chat room sent it to me. Found it over at MediaMatters.org. If you watch the thing, you can see that, you know, Cindy just sits there and, you know, bless her. You know, I'm guessing she made, back before her world was just daggum destroyed, I'm guessing that when little Casey was growing up, she was probably the mommy where everybody came for the home-baked peanut butter cookies. You know, she's got a peanut butter Toll House cookie kind of personality. She's got the personality of a woman who never wanted to do anything else but love her family. She was active in her church, and she is getting sleazed. I mean, swift-boated sunshine. By every right-wing freak in this nation, and it is sickening, and it is an indictment of our country that people would talk about Cindy Sheehan the way they do. Oh, what do you mean, Bob? I'll tell you what I mean when we get back. You know the phone number. If you want to jump in and participate, I welcome you to. I mean, you know, you look, you know, we're a poor but honest liberal radio network. You call, we'll try to get you on as quick as possible. 877-443-2366. Email comes into bob@headonradio.com. This is the Head On Radio Network, and this is, for good or ill, Bob. We'll be right back.
intense, so it ain't easy to be seen. When they see me ride by, they can see the gleam. I shine on the deck in a TV screen. Ride with a new chick, she like hold up. Next to the PlayStation controller. If a full trip, then I'm gonna show ya. Send a jack her into. Girl, you know I'm crazy like crazy. Bone trying to make your money, trying to have no babies. Ride clean as well, so I pull in ladies. Laws are patrolling, you know they hate me. Your music turn all the way up into the maximum. I got speakers, some boys try to jack with some, but we.
Hey, Ben, where are we?
What, are you born yesterday? We're at the doctor's office.
I'm sick? Already? Oh, break it to me, Ben. What have I got?
Kid, relax. We're here for our second newborn screening.
A newborn screening? What's that?
You see, we got tested for these rare diseases when we are first born. But sometimes they don't show up till we're older. So you gotta get the second test between 7 and 14 days.
Diseases? I feel sick. Oh, I better got something in the nursery. Remember that kid who screamed all the time?
Breathe, baby. This test is for treatable stuff. If anything is wrong, now's the time to find out.
I heard even healthy-looking kids can have something deadly, Ben.
That's why every baby's gotta go back for his second screening.
So, with the second heel stick, you think my chances are good?
Heel stick? What heel stick? Nobody told me nothing about a heel stick.
Oh, brother!
For information on this newborn screening program, call the Tech Department of Health.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get
me. I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office. That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
I never knew that everything was falling through, that everyone I knew was waiting on a cue to turn and run when all I needed was the truth. But that's how it's got to be. It's coming down to nothing more than apathy. I'd rather run the other way than stay and see the smoke and who still stands.
Okay. 22 minutes before the hour, and we are going right to the phones because it's Friday, and we know what Friday means. It's our evening call to check in with the real world across the Atlantic. Before we do that, however, I said that they're sleazing Cindy Sheehan. Well, you know, I don't just say things. This is that guy who is becoming I'm almost as fond of him as I am of Donald Wildman. This is the latest talk sensation from the Headline News Network. Only he wouldn't dare say this on national TV because he would get his butt booted. This is Glenn Beck talking about Cindy Sheehan's hunger strike.
You know, now that I've
I've exposed the overall limpness of the Cindy Sheehan movement, which is not exactly the Viagra that people were hoping for, that were carrying peace signs and flowers, but I feel it's necessary, and this is really not as much necessary. Well, it is necessary strictly for your amusement. This is for entertainment purposes only.
That's the out.
I feel it is important to tell you about the latest horrible PR stunt from Cindy Sheehan. Again, just for entertainment purposes. Cindy Sheehan, the tragedy pimp, as we like to call her, is going on a hunger strike. Surprisingly, they're not doing this because they, you know, want a follow-up book deal. They actually think that the press is not covering the true cost of war. And that's why she's going on a hunger strike. She's practically Gandhi in a pantsuit.
Now, let's before we become upset about that, let's... Yeah, too late for Agnes. But really, let's step back for just a second. Can anybody tell me what in that little blurb? You know, I don't claim to do anything on this program that's worth a bazillion dollars. I think maybe what I do is worth, you know, a middle class living. But you know, that's, you know, we're poor.
Oh.
You know, we are building something here, and we're doing it not because we're doing it because we believe in it. We're doing it because it's what our souls tell us to do. But can anyone tell me what in that juvenile little potty humored clip that you just heard is worth $1 million or so? Please? Please? Because I want to know. I don't know that I could sell myself out and start doing that kind of... Did you hear how it started out? What have I said about Republicans?
They're nasty.
That if they can't kill it or screw it, or if they can't... No, I'm sorry. If they can't screw it or steal it, they'll just kill it. He starts out this thing using words like limpness... and Viagra. I mean, I know when this guy's on. He's on when mommies are driving their little children to school. God knows Howard Stern got run off of the public airwaves for a lot less than that. But this right-wing freak, as long as he is trashing a grieving mother, it's okay. And I despise him for it. I truly, truly do. I joked the other night about, well, you know, if there's any place on earth that me and Rush Limbaugh could ever get along, it would be on a golf course. And, you know, hey, nice shot. No, you know, nice up. You know, you're dancing now, Rush. But I don't think there's anywhere on this sweet little blue-green marble, time machine hurtling through the universe that I could share anything in common or have a decent conversation with Glenn Beck. Tragedy pimp? Yeah, I heard it. You heard it. Tragedy pimp? Why, she's practically Gandhi in a pantsuit? How much more condescending can one loser, never did anything with his life whatsoever dude get than Glenn Beck did? Yes, dear.
This is the same man that was talking about the Make-A-Wish Foundation with children who had leukemia, brain tumors, and he cried. But it's okay for Cindy Sheehan's son to have been killed in an absolute worthless war. That's fine. And he makes remarks that godless amoebic pig snot about this
Testify,
woman.
Sister.
Oh, no, I'm not testifying. I'm mad. About this poor woman who lost her son, and she's trying to do something about it.
And she's Gandhi in a pantsuit.
Gandhi in a pantsuit. Well, you know what? If Glenn Beck ever would even dare to think one iota like Gandhi, it would enlighten him, but he
it
doesn't.
It would require about 99 bajillion more brain cells than that poor little sucker owns.
Wait,
but no, let's go to the phones.
That goes to show He doesn't care about the Make-A-Wish Foundation, something that's worthwhile. He cares about being a media prostitute, and that's it.
This editorial by Agnes Kincaid. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program. I didn't want to make you wait too long. I'm sorry.
That's all right, man. How's it going? You all right?
Doing okay. How about you?
Wicked. Well, yeah, I'm okay. I've been pretty furious this evening. That Glenn Beck comment didn't really help, but the guy's what? Not credible, say.
He's not. We say he's not credible, and we move on.
Absolutely. No, I have a moral for everybody tonight, which might help you all if you're all on some kind of weight loss regime. People out there might be. Don't buy burgers.
Okay.
Because if you buy burgers, especially around here, you get attacked by drunk 16-year-old girls.
There are those who think that there are those I think who might regard that as fun, Andy. You better enlighten us.
Well, like actually physically attacked, and if I hadn't defended myself like fairly passively and non-aggressively, I would have been a lot worse than just a scratch on the.
So, like she came across the counter at you, or
no, I was walking to get a burger. She was staggering up the street on the other side of the pavement, and then as she came past me, she just started swinging punches at me. It was quite incredible. Started screaming about how I was some evil mosher, which is a kind of term for rocker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely. Just another lovely evening in old Cardiff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they say that the change in the licensing laws hasn't made any effect.
So she's 16 years old and she's loaded out of her mind.
About that, yeah. No more than 17. I don't even think she was 16, to be honest with you. Do you know what I mean? But it's kind of hard to tell. I'm getting a bit old. I can't really tell anymore.
Well, thank God she doesn't have ready access. No, I'm sorry, you're in a civilized country. In this country, she couldn't get drunk, but she also couldn't get an abortion. So, you know.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, not enough to do here either. But but no, yeah, one of those ridiculous situations that makes you glad to live in a civilized society, really, doesn't it? Because you know that if I'd have punched her, which I didn't, I just grabbed her and twisted her and threw her about a bit and, like, you know, put her on the floor a couple of times and made her look stupid in front of her friends. But if I'd have punched her, I'd be the one up in court and probably getting to prison.
Oh, yeah.
Without question, you know? And, yeah, I mean, it drives me nuts. But I think I know where her mum works, so I can get an embarrassment.
Well, because that's pretty strong medicine.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Look, everybody, it's the failure as a parent.
Yeah, basically, go in and give her some hell about how she raises her kids. But no, on to more important things. Did you all know we were celebrating the passings of 52 people last year with the London bombings today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Our friend Sue called in last night and remarked upon it.
I missed last night's show, I'm afraid. I was out of kilter with my sleeping pattern, so I actually slept through the night here, which is bizarre.
Bad, Andy, bad.
But, yeah, we had, wall-to-wall news coverage, you know, where the stories really mentioned on the news, and, you know, all the local news goes, oh, there was someone who was related to somebody who now lives in Wales that was killed on the 7th, so we'll devote our half hour to that. And it was totally overblown and utterly unnecessary. And, I mean,
anybody calling the grieving families over there tragedy pimps?
Well, no. We're lucky in that respect because our media wouldn't actually let people get away with that. Do you know what I mean? The BBC and ITV, as horrible as they can be in favor of the pro-war regime, they really wouldn't let people get away with that kind of just pure hideousy of mind. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we have, you know, the ridiculous, oh, how do you feel statements about everything, you know, to everyone as soon as something's happened, and how do you feel now a year on, and you know, how do you feel now you've had both your legs blown off and a huge hole in your head and all this sort of stuff, and the whole thing just drives me nuts. I mean,
does it have some of the orgy quality that our markings of tragedies over here do?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, we're not quite as bad as the overblown fanfares you do get over there, but we still have just far too much glorying in horror. And I mean, you know, if we really want to treat terrorism like it should be treated, it's not a military problem, it's a police problem.
It's a law enforcement problem.
It's a law enforcement. You might need the military, I mean, because we don't arm our police particularly heavily. We do have armed police, but those ones have got light machine guns and pistols and stuff. So sometimes you need the heavy guys, and then you call up the SAS. That's what we've managed with quite well.
Yeah, the ones you haven't managed to get killed yet in Afghanistan.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, you know, we have this bizarre kind of, we've got to quick expand the police force because, we're so under threat. But none of this. What we need to do is we need to treat these people as criminals, and we need to look at them when we have intelligence, and we need to arrest them. I mean, the four guys that blew themselves up in London, as soon as it happened, they were all told, everyone was told, they were clean skins, which is a wonderful expression, meaning that no terrorist links. No terrorist past. We didn't know who they were. It just happened out of the blue. And then, of course, by now we've
that proves that. Oh, but that proves that society is really a scary place to be.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Got to fear. More police state quickly. But actually, we find out that all four of them and their associates had been under surveillance for a couple of years in some cases, and they'd been watched all the way to Pakistan to the crazy training camps that they went to. And
well, wasn't it the July bombers? That Dear Leader screwed you guys over on by blowing their cover?
Yeah. I mean, you know, well, the American intelligence agency now can't be trusted because of Bush. You know, I mean, the French and the Germans have had the same thing happen to them with their operations, their passive information, and, we can use that for political gain in the States, says Bush, or Cheney, more likely, and out it comes, you know. That's why the Germans and the French don't pass information to the CIA or anyone else anymore.
We can't be trusted.
Well, you know, they pass it if they want it to come out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, it's not going to be long until MI5 and MI6 over here start doing that, because they simply can't trust you guys. And, well, I say you guys, your security state. And I'm not surprised. I mean, you know, look at the history of it. I mean, what has your national security state done? It's caused wars in, Vietnam and everywhere in South and Central America since then, and Iraq and Afghanistan. It's probably going to start a war with Iran. I mean, you know, it's so bad. Have you heard that your own military planners have said we can't bomb Iran because we don't know what to hit, because we haven't got any real intelligence, because it's all being made up?
Yeah, I haven't spent a lot of time, Andy, on the Seymour Hersh article, but I had a paragraph highlighted in it because it was if you read a Seymour Hersh article, down in the middle of it, there's usually a paragraph that will absolutely make the little hairs on the back of your neck stand on end, because you know he's good and he lays it all out, and then he just, you know, hits you across the head with the ball bat.
Yeah.
And in this one, it was the business of laying out what a disaster an attack on Iran might be. And then he says, however, there is a cadre of neoconservatives surrounding the president who think that an attack on Iran, let me see if I can reconstruct this, an attack on Iran would be the very thing to do, because then we would draw them out and be able to defeat them once and for all, once they attack the troops in Iraq.
Well, in response to that, idiot, probably Donald Rumsfeld, isn't it? In response to that, I would like to quote Tariq Ali, who, I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a big liberal atheist, born and raised in Muslim country, sort of speaker, along the lines of Noam Chomsky and so forth. And he visits a lot in the Middle East and all over the place, and you know, I mean, he actually talks to people and stuff. And he was in Saudi Arabia, or maybe Qatar. But there was a big meeting of foreign ministers and vice presidents of the area. And the vice president of Iran was there. And people in Saudi Arabia and Yemen and people were asking the vice president of Iran, are you worried that America might bomb you? And he just started laughing. And they were all a bit confused. And they said, why are you laughing? Isn't it a danger? And he said, well, it's possible. They're insane. They could do it. But if they bomb us, then, well, they won't hit anything worthwhile because it's hidden. And we won't fight them in Iran. We'll fight them in Iraq. And we'll crush their army. And they will. Cause
well, yeah, I mean, it's...
They'll send 2.5 million men across the border, and the Iraqis will let them.
It's the NBN foo in a litter box.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely insane to even talk about attacking Iran.
It is worth remembering, because we're very good at forgetting, because there's so much information just bowling us over every day, Andy. The Iranians and the Iraqi government have signed a non-aggression treaty.
Mm-hmm. It's only a short step to a mutual defense pact.
I think they've done that, too.
Probably. I'm sure they wouldn't tell anyone if they had.
No, that's the whole purpose.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know that the 60% the 60% that are Shia are just on the Iranian side. I mean, the reason the Americans are still alive in Iraq, don't let you think that your military, like anybody who's listening, don't think that your military is alive because they can keep themselves alive. The only reason they're alive is because the Iranians have said, don't attack the Americans, and by and large, the Shia aren't.
Yeah, they are being permitted to live.
Yeah, that's it. And as soon as the Iranian government goes, that's enough.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's a term in the oldie English common law that kind of describes the American military presence in Iraq. They are tenants at sufferance.
Absolutely. That's absolutely what they are. And the worst thing is they don't know. Your military are so convinced they're supreme. Well, you might be when it comes to laying down huge amounts of force when you're organized. But when it comes to fighting a pitched battle to the death, well, in Iraq, you're going to be stuffed because you're a very long way from your supplies.
Well, it goes to show what we have forgotten, not so much what we've learned, but what we've forgotten, Andy, because anyone who studies our Civil War knows that Ulysses Grant, the Union Supreme Commander, succeeded in many different battles against the South, not because he was the greater strategist. The South had the bold and brilliant generals. But what the North had was numbers, and the Grant simply did a calculation of the South has this many men and this many bullets, so if I use this many men and 3x bullets, I win.
Yeah, and that's exactly what will happen. Of course, the American military in Iraq are on the side of the South, as it were. The British as well. I mean, the British are at the moment living in their barracks and not leaving them because they've been told that they're not wanted. And that's what they're doing. They're just staying in their barracks and the occasional drop off to the airport to pick up supplies. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them coming home within the next year, regardless of the American plan.
Well, for you guys' sake, I hope that that's the case, Andy.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I have cousins in the military, and I think one of them's in Iraq at the moment. You know, they've sort of rotate around through it, and you never know where they are, really. But, our military is not supposed to be used for this, and neither is yours. War is not supposed to be a racket. Not nowadays. And, of course, obviously nothing's ever reported about the way America constantly vetoes things in the UN, the Security Council. Nothing's ever said about the way America constantly refuses to sign.
Well, no, we have real news to report, Andy. We have missing white girls in the Caribbean.
It's not even that, Bob. I mean, if America uses a veto in the UN, the people who record the minutes aren't allowed to record that it happened. The whole vote just goes into the memory hole. If the U.S. uses its veto, it can say, we veto even talking about this happening.
That's some catch, that catch-22.
Oh, it's a beautiful catch-22, and of course it's summed up by Bolton's, we pay, we say, attitude towards the U.N., which of course is not why it was set up in the first place, but that doesn't matter to Bolton, because he's a fascist.
Well, it was supposed to be an exercise in democracy, but,
Yeah, who cares about democracy? I mean, let's remember this, everybody. Democracy is fine. Democracy is fine as long as the democratically elected government does exactly what the U.S. wants. I mean, look at your history.
Is this the part where we all go back and read the Malian dialogue from Thucydides? I think it is, Andy.
But, I mean,
great nations do what they will. Small nations do what they must.
Well, that's it. I mean, look at Iraq in the 1950s. A democratically elected government. But unfortunately, the guy nationalized the oil.
Yeah, Iran. Oh. You mean Mossadegh?
Well, no, it happened before that in Iraq. I'm sure it happened in both places. I mean, it's happened pretty much anywhere there's oil and anyone.
Well, but in 1950, it was Iran. It was Prime Minister Mossadegh.
Must have been later on in the 60s.
And it was Churchill pressure. It was Churchill pressuring Truman to overthrow Mossadegh. Truman wouldn't.
Yeah, well, it was all on behalf of BP and Shell and the various other monster companies. And that's what it's always about. War has become a racket on behalf of the oil corporations. And we really do need to take control of our government and say no more. And, I mean, it comes down to you guys need to take control of your government, because Britain and Europe can conceivably go our own way. And we can conceivably go our own way and take places like Africa with us. But we're always going to have problems if you guys don't get rid of the crazy fascists that are running your regime.
Well, we really do. We've got a job to do here, Andy. And there's some hope, because there are right-wing commentators out there saying that there's absolutely no excitement on the radical right for the coming congressional elections. And I hope they stay depressed, because there is excitement on the left.
Oh, absolutely. What you need to do is you need to get those damn machines out of the vote. And I mean, if it comes to, I don't know, everyone turning every device in their house on the day of the vote to cause power drains across the areas. Whatever it takes, yeah, turn the damn things off and make sure you get a paper vote. You've got to do this. I mean, people need to get a copy of the code and hack it open and take it, you know, in front of a...
Yeah, a little civil disobedience here and there.
Well, I mean, you don't even need to do civil disobedience. You just need to get a couple of lawyers who are...
Well, you got to understand that even looking at the code on these machines, Andy, is a violation of law and a violation of the contract between the individual county and the voting machine manufacturer.
Well, that's why you need to take a couple of attorneys, lawyers, whatever you call them over there, and you need to get a judge, and you need to get it done that way. You need to get it done in the court. So, I mean, if a judge says, I legally demand the right to have a look at this and see if it's fair, then there's not much a contract can say about that, is there?
True. Andy, we've got a roll. We're at the top of the hour. So good to hear from you. I hope you get to feeling better from your... From your dust up.
Yeah, no, I'm just a bit angry. Do you know what I mean?
I do. But yeah, have a little tête-à-tête with the parents.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna embarrass her. Hopefully, in front of her child. So.
Oh, and happy birthday to Hazel.
Oh well, yeah, I'll pass that on. She's actually asleep because she's had a very good evening with some champagne and stuff, so.
Well, sounds lovely. Maybe there's a couple of leavings. All right, take care, Andy.
You too, man. I'll speak to you soon.
Bye now.
Bye, mate.
And it's news time. Your calls, of course, are welcome at 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network.
You know, I was campaigning in Chicago, and somebody asked me, is there ever any time where the budget might have to go into deficit? I said, only if we were at war or had a national emergency or were in recession. Little did I realize we'd get the trifecta.
1995. In 1965, Vietnam seemed like just another foreign war. But it wasn't. It was different in many ways, and so were those who did the fighting. In World War II, the average age of the combat soldier was 26. In Vietnam, he was 19.
This is the Quality News Network. In Chicago, President Bush held a press conference addressing questions about North Korea, Iran, and Iraq. He said that with our new anti-ballistic systems, the United States had a reasonable chance of shooting down the long-range missile North Korea fired earlier this week if it had not failed. Japan is pushing for a UN Security Council vote tomorrow to place sanctions against North Korea's missile program. This comes despite opposition from veto-wielding members China and Russia. In New York, the FBI and Homeland Security Department announced they have disrupted a terrorist network with plans to target the tunnels under the Hudson River. The key suspect was arrested by Lebanese authorities after FBI monitoring of internet chat rooms led to a break in the investigation. Two more suspects are also in custody abroad but have not been charged, according to the FBI. London is marking the one-year anniversary of the suicide terror attacks that killed 52 people. The city's police chief says that more attacks are actively being planned and that the terrorism threat has palpably increased in Britain. In Jerusalem, for the first time since the nearly two-week military incursion into the Gaza Strip began, a top Israeli official indicated that Israel may be willing to trade Palestinian prisoners for the captured 19-year-old Israeli soldier. In and around Baghdad, four bomb attacks on Sunni and Shiite mosques killed 11 worshippers today. At least 55 were injured. A civil rights group says that white supremacists are joining the U.S. military to receive the world's best combat training. The Southern Poverty Law Center says relaxed recruiting standards have made it easier for such members to join. In Mexico, following the razor-thin victory of the conservative presidential candidate, there are fears of possible violence this weekend. His liberal opponent, who campaigned as the people's champion, is calling for his supporters to take to the streets and protest the election results. Italian news agencies are reporting that a judge has ordered Italy's former prime minister to stand trial. He is accused of fraud in connection with the sale of television rights at his family's media company. The Space Shuttle Discovery crew began transferring thousands of pounds of supplies to the International Space Station. Their mission will now be 13 days. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In June, payrolls went up by 121,000 workers, according to the Labor Department. The report also shows that the unemployment rate remained at 4.6%. In Washington on Monday, Henry Paulson, the former head of the Wall Street investment firm Goldman Sachs, will be sworn in as the new Treasury Secretary. In Detroit, GM's board of directors voted today to start exploratory discussions on a possible alliance with Nissan and Renault. The idea came from investor Kirk Kerkorian, who owns the largest stake in GM. A class action lawsuit has been filed against Singular Wireless on behalf of more than 20 million AT&T customers. They are accusing the company of nickel and diming them to pay transfer fees, sign new contracts, and buy new phones after the merger, which they say resulted in degraded service. Verizon Communications will be leaving the phone book business by the end of this year, according to a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission today. Although the organic food market only makes up 2.5% of the nation's food market, demand is now outpacing supply. New statistics show that sales of organic food are growing between 15 and 21% each year. Light sweet crude settled at $74.09 a barrel today, and near the close of Wall Street, the Dow is down 134 points, the NASDAQ is down 25 points, the S&P 500 down 9. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, coming up on 7 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob. This is Head On. Moving right along. I mentioned something last night, and I'm going to go ahead and give vent to it now. Because it seems appropriate. Well, wait a minute. There was something I wanted. This from a column by Greg Palast. Titled London 77 George and Tony Get Their Al Qaeda Fix. You know, Greg Palast deals with heady stuff. And he does it with a surprisingly good attitude. And humor. The Tooth Fairy, Santa Claus, WorldCom Prophets, the Easter Bunny, Al Qaeda. And he goes on to point out on this anniversary of the London bombing. Well, let's hear Greg's words. The cruel, evil jerks who blew up the London subway 1 year ago today, despite appropriating Al-Qaeda's name for their website and T-shirts, have about as much to do with Al-Qaeda as a Beatles tribute band has to do with the Fab Four. For all the horror, hoopla, and hair-pulling, this was no September 11th. Timmy McVeigh slaughtered a heck of a lot more people in Oklahoma City with his cow poop bomb. And he does note, I'm not belittling the heartbreaking hideousness of this crime, but let's get the facts straight. If Al-Qaeda is the Panzer Division of terrorism, these London bombers were terrorism's Cub Scouts. We're talking a few pounds of nitro wired to a clock, a design badly copied off the internet. But the point is, Greg Pallast says, it's not Al-Qaeda, but for George and Tony, it's good enough. Blair's foreign secretary dramatically dashed out to tell us that the explosions had the hallmarks of Al-Qaeda. Our commander-in-chief, looking as commanding as possible, no reading of kiddie stories this time, could not have been more satisfied. The hallmarks of Al-Qaeda? That's not true, and Blair knows it, and Bush knows it, and that's no little matter, my friends. Now, what's fascinating about all this, this is published... Greg Pallast works for the BBC. Okay? And we all know that the English libel laws are amazingly restrictive. Truth is not even a defense to British libel laws. Over here, if somebody sues you for libel and you prove it's true, you make them eat it. Over there, truth won't even save you. And yet this continues to be published. What does that tell you? That tells you, of course, that they would not dare march into court against the stuff that Greg Pallast has accumulated, the damning evidence that he has. He says, but our war president and war prime minister are having a little problem with their war on terror. The enemy's gone AWOL, except when we go looking for trouble, as in invading a Mesopotamian country. Trouble pretty much stopped looking for us. But, see, that's the problem. We got a whole bunch of people in America who watch American Idol and who wants to get a brand new nose and you know... And made up, by the way, and there's some fine acting in the program, if I understand correctly, made up terrorism stories in the form of the 24 with Kiefer Sutherland. What does it say that one of the most popular one of the most popular TV shows in America is a story that details 24 hours in an attempt to stop some nefarious plot that's going to kill boodles of people? It's one of the most popular shows on television this side of American Isle. But, you know, we're concerned with the Britney's pregnancy. And we're not concerned with finding out, you know, that this truth that Greg Pallast speaks is sufficient to probably have both Bush and Blair removed from office. He refers to them, Blair and Bush are Al-Qaeda junkies. They've sold us on everything from fingerprinting five-year-olds to invading Baghdad to tolerating plummeting paychecks, all on the slick line that we are under attack by a well-trained, well-armed, well-funded hidden army called Al-Qaeda. One of our friends, Gary, sent me a link today, you know, on the internets. No, sent me a link today to the video at Google Video of The Power of Nightmares. If you haven't, I've watched it. If you haven't, do. Because it's brilliantly sourced. It's not like Ann Coulter and, you know, just a gang of plagiarized BS. It is, in fact, reality-based. I call this the terrified nation, the coward nation, and it is. And you know, don't trust me. Don't necessarily believe me. You know, look at the news. Where is it? Where is it? Where is that thing? Oh, yeah. Headline. U.S. reports plot to bomb New York City metro tunnels. The liars are so bad off they can't even come up with a new plot. This is a rerun from 1993. A
terrorist plot to inflict death and destruction by attacking New York City train tunnels used by tens of thousands of commuters each day was thwarted before the men could travel to the United States. Did this happen in Miami, too? See, this story is out there because if you go in, you know, I got this at MSNBC. If you go into it far enough, you'll find out. Police arrested the man on April 27th, acting on information from the FBI, said a senior security official who spoke on condition of anonymity because the investigation is ongoing. Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes and Little Lambsy Divey, a Kiddly Divey too, wouldn't you? The suspect uses the alias Amir Andalusli, but his real name is Asim Hamoud. No, it didn't come from the Onion. Because, you see, you know why this story's out there. This story is out there because... because they trotted out the terrifying Negroes in Miami and no one bought that one. Oh, yeah, Gonzalez. Well, you know, they weren't dangerous now, but they could get dangerous. Someday they could be dangerous. They might be dangerous day after tomorrow. That's why we had to entrap them. They were sort of trying to decide whether they were going to play hoops or dominoes. And we had to go in because they were dangerous. Oh, God, they were dangerous. And we had to go in and ask them if they'd like to get on a bus and go blow up the Sears Tower. Right? Right. This is a plot that involved martyrdom and explosives and focused on the tubes that connect Jersey and lower Manhattan, said FBI Assistant Director Mark Marshall. I thought the tubes were what made up the Internet. Sorry, different tubes, I guess. A federal law enforcement official said the suspects hope to inflict damage on the U.S. economy. You think? I mean, you know, the men believed that by bombing the train tunnels, they could unleash a severe flood on lower Manhattan, including Wall Street, said the official who spoke on condition of anonymity, because the investigation is ongoing, going, 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 going. This is astonishing. I mean, and, you know, Quality News Network at the top of the hour has been announcing this. And the thing is, I know some New Yorkers. Some New Yorkers are my friend. And you, Mr. Ongoing Investigation Anonymous Law Enforcement Official, are no New Yorker. You might be terrified. New Yorkers get up and go to work every day and make the best of their lives. You know, New Yorkers after 9/11 were trying to figure out a way to get back to normal before George Bush could show up and stand on the rubble with the bullhorn and the dummied up speech about the guy's badge that his father had delivered, you know, 10 years earlier. Really, you remember that? And they can't even come up with a new plot. I mean, couldn't it be something besides the... I mean, this just blows my tiny mind. And please, don't buy into this hooey. Don't buy into it. It was never a concern that this would actually be executed. That's the part where you understand this is another deal like Miami, said Homeland Security Secretary Michael Skeletor Chertoff. We were, as I say, all over this. Yeah, buddy, you were all over it. You authored it. It was your... you know. Eight suspects, including an Al-Qaeda loyalist, arrested in Lebanon. I mean, what are they passing it? Listen... okay, if Al-Qaeda is real and are as nefarious as they say they are, they're not passing out dog tags and certificates suitable for framing, okay? A dedicated Al-Qaeda loyalist. Do you remember the story of the scary dudes from Miami where, they said a pledge of allegiance to Osama? Oh, well, okay. Let's go to the phones. Laura, our good friend from Michigan, is calling. Laura, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
Oh, I'm doing all right, except when I have to every other day hear these new plots against us. You know,
at least they're not at least they weren't going to blow up the cherry orchards in Michigan. I hear the cherries are quite nice right now.
Yep, it is cherry season. Between now, you know what happened is they figured people were starting to not be as afraid as they needed to be. So now we got to hear the little made up plots, and they said something about they found them in a chat room.
Yeah, that's
now,
the...
Now, should they have actually told that? Because, you know, the New York Times got in a lot of trouble talking about how they were looking through the money. And now they let it slip that they found them in a chat room. So now Al-Qaeda's hip to the chat room.
Yeah, right. You know, God, the FBI is... they're traitors, Laura. They're traitors.
I thought somebody should have to pay for that, fall on their sword or something. And now I got to keep track of the little minor demonesses that are out there with Norm Macdonald. I mean, I already got my first class ones, you know, the one that's in the throat of Caney. And, you know, you can tell when they all start talking a line, they go, and then I go, here we go, the demon's talking now, you know, and then they let the human part go a little bit, you know, and they sound like they're regular people. But when you let those demons get inside of you.
Yeah, I know. It's your mother chucks rocks in hell or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Straight out of The Exorcist.
Yeah. Or a Damien story, you know. That's what kind of reminds me of when Bush gets going.
Well, no, it's so true, though. I mean, they're channeling. Nora O'Donnell was channeling. I don't know if somebody even has to give talking points to Glenn Beck because he's just nasty.
Yeah, you know, it's like you said, when you were talking about the gay points yesterday, was it yesterday?
Oh yeah, the homosexual agenda.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to vary it, you know. So I mean, they only had to fax those out one time for the Republicans. Because it's pretty much the same thing. And if you listen to Rush, I mean, it's the same thing. You just add different names and, you know, and you go for the same stuff.
Yeah.
The thing that's really scary now is, though, we're the bad guys, and he's got his crew, like, talking like somebody needs to come out and kill us and things. And I can't remember now. I listened to Mike. I listened to you. There was a lady who got her back windshield broken out.
Yeah, I heard that last night.
Was that on my?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's scary.
Yeah, it is, and it's the way these cowards operate too.
But the scary part is the woman said she wasn't taking the stuff off her car, and I'm going, no, take it off your car because it's just not. You could be dead right. That's not good. I ain't putting nothing on my car.
Well, I do quietly fly an American flag upside down on my automobile, Laura.
Upside down?
Yeah. Sign of distress.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, I understand. But, I mean, do you agree with me, Bob, or what?
Well, I want to see people survive for the fight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the, by the fight, I mean the election in November. So, yeah, you do make some sense, Laura.
I figure if times get real bad... my house can be one of those undercover houses where people pass through. If they got to run somewhere, I'm in Michigan. If they got to escape to Canada, you know, like in the old days, you can escape right through my house because nobody's going to really know.
Yeah, an underground railroad.
That's right. And one of us in the house is registered Democrat. One of us is registered Republican. So we got both bases covered.
Okay.
Well, you
say it, and you sound very serious about it, and I'm glad you are, because I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, Laura. The day may come.
Well, there was one time back in the 80s when they asked Democrats to register Republicans so you could vote in the primary. And vote, you know what? You know, I know it's kind of devious, but I did. I was just a Republican and voted for the person they didn't want to have.
Yeah, but see, that's Michigan, Laura. That's not devious at all. You get down in the deep South, and you can go and vote in the Republican primary and not even have to register as diddly.
I know that.
Or vice versa. It's just bizarre.
Until just recently when I heard that. So I never changed it. And so I figured now maybe it's just a sign to stay that way. And
yeah.
Yeah. So I get all the Republican stuff for my state, you know, so I know what they're working on.
Well, good. I mean, it's kind of good to keep an eye on the...
That's what I think.
Monsters. Yeah.
That's how I work.
Well, you've got to operate in these days with your eyes wide open, and you've got to be willing to realize that the more pressure that comes to bear on George Bush, the more desperate and dangerous that last little cancerous knot of supporters of his are going to become. You know, we don't describe everything as war, but like I mentioned last night, I had the email from the American Family Association, and you know, it's really tough fighting the culture wars. You know, I'm not at war with these people. You're not at war with them, Laura.
Right.
They are, however, by their own admission, at war with us.
Yep, that's for sure. And it's like when I get in the car, I'm listening to the other side. So I hear him. And like today, Hannity, going all ballistic over poor Lieberman, you know.
Oh, what, getting beat up in the debate?
Son. Yeah, you know, they're... So I know they're going to try everything in their power to get him elected. And
and they're frankly
to run as president so bad they can taste it, you know, because they know she's not going to win. And I'm one of those people that do not want her to run. I'm sorry, I don't respect her that much. And you know this, you know, I hear people gushing over how she stayed with Bill and everything and how wonderful that was. You know what? I don't think that was wonderful. And I don't think they have a wonderful marriage. And I do believe those two are so politically minded, that's why they stay together. Because when you start getting divorced and all that kind of thing, you don't get to run for political offices successfully. And he wanted it bad. So she stayed with him. That's what I believe. Now, other people might disagree with me. But that's why I believe they stayed married.
Well, I think by the time you get to a level where you're contending seriously for something like the presidency, you at some point, you know, no matter how good you are, and this, you know, this extends to somebody like even perhaps Jimmy Carter, at some level, you have done some swap meet stuff for your soul.
Yeah, you're right. Yep, you're right about that.
And you do make calculations that would otherwise, you know, that otherwise you might make morally. You make them on political grounds, and everybody. But the thing is, everybody around you, Laura, says, "Well, you know, that's how you have to do it." You know, it tells you how far we have come. That you know, we once had a man who was president, the last one who was impeached before Bill Clinton. Andrew Johnson was illiterate until he was 20 years old.
Yeah, that's something.
And we've gotten to the point where you know, no, there's not going to be any more log cabin presidents.
Right. Yeah.
You know, these are all scheming, calculating, triangulating, dot connecting men and women who will do a certain amount of filth and dirtiness to achieve political power. You know, I'm looking for a day, and you know, the cornerstone of all this, one of these days we will have public financing of political campaigns. And then people can run for office and do it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I don't believe in term limits.
Where all the masks are off, and nobody cares that everybody sees how dirty they are. That's just wrong. You know, at least in the day, they had to at least act right a certain percentage of the time, you know, and pretend at least enough they had to do enough right stuff to keep everybody full.
Well, yeah.
Seems like
you got to at least maintain appearances.
Yeah, so some good things were getting done. Now, nobody cares. And this administration, they just say, You know, I grew up in a household where people said said what they wanted the truth to be, not what it was. And this is how these people are running their the world.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm kind of spoiled or old-fashioned or idealistic or something. But I keep hearkening back to the words of Bobby Kennedy about how, you know, some people see the world as it is and say why, and I see the world as it should be and say why not.
Yeah.
Did I do that right?
Yeah.
We've got to have a rebirth of idealism. Although, you know, every effort has been made to beat the idealism out of everybody who gets involved in the political process. That you know, there is a professional industry of disillusionment and disenfranchisement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of people who would be happy to see these filthy machines stay in place in the electoral process because there are a lot of people who are benefited by keeping people away from the polls.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's pretty easy to be disillusioned, you know, in this
it is.
Time.
And so, you know, that makes it all the more important that we remain focused.
Well,
and
that, Bob, but they have people so strapped that it's taken all their energy just to try to survive.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of energy to stay with these people and up on things, you know?
Well, and, you know, you look back to the late 60s when the protests against the Vietnam War began. Those things happened in part because there was a separate movement, you know, hippies, yippies, whatever you want to call them, who had decided to sort of get off the grid and, you know, check out, what was it, turn on, tune in, and turn out, I forget. But, you know, who were already sort of out there living a different lifestyle, so they were available to get out and go protest for 3 or 4 or 6 days or get arrested or burn a draft card or whatever. That does not exist in America today. That counterculture does not exist. The counterculture is 60 years old and trying to figure out whether or not they're going to have adequate health care when they retire.
I'm only almost 52, so don't go there, Bob.
Well, I'm not taking you there. I mean, but you know what I'm talking about. We can't go out and protest 5 days in front of the White House. We'd lose our jobs.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Right.
So, well, you know, it's
like I've said before, I just try to keep the positiveness about things going.
And you've got to actively search for it, Laura.
Yeah, I know it's not easy. I keep a cynical mind frame quite a bit, but you know, I just try to work against these people as much as I can. You know, I support some causes and you know, and like listening to your radio program, and I got off the stick and go, okay, I've got to be part of the program, so here I am.
Well, bless your heart. We do love hearing from you.
Thank you. And that's just another way I'm trying to help.
Well, you know, when people hear this program, and more people are hearing it every day, when they hear this program and they hear people call in and they hear people empower themselves and they hear people embolden themselves, your voice may add another voice in a place that you can't even imagine, Laura. You know, someone who hears you call in, you know, may turn around and say, you know, may think about it when they hear some wingnut babbling off about, we gotta support the troops and we gotta have time, can't have no timetable and stay the course. And it may empower them to look at the guy and say, you know, what are you, and ask him, you know, what are you smoking? What are you drinking? Why have you not quit huffing glue yet?
Yeah.
And explain to them that there is no course to stay, that there is no mission to accomplish. We tend to feel kind of isolated, I guess, Laura, but we have we have effects. We have impact that we can scarcely contemplate.
Well,
and it's one of those things that keeps me going, and I believe it probably, you know, keeps you tuning in. You know, it's about, you know, yeah, we get angry and I raise a ruckus and carry on and that kind of foolishness. But at the bottom, it is about restoring personal sovereignty and restoring a willingness to participate in the process to a very disillusioned people.
Well, you know, Bob, I think you're right. And it's a wonderful thing you're doing. And thank you for helping to empower me. And like you said, I hope other people feel the same way.
Well, I know for a fact from the email that I get that they do, Laura. And it's good to know that you're out there and up there in Michigan and you know, fighting the fight.
All righty.
All right, you take care.
Okay, you too. Have a good weekend.
I'm going to try. You as well.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, we're a little late for the bottom of the hour break, but we're going to take it anyway. When we come back, your phone calls as you see fit. This is Conversation Radio, after all. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
Continental Tire is laying off 400 workers today at its Charlotte, North Carolina plant as it shifts production to Brazil and Mexico. United Steelworkers Union spokesman Wayne Ranick says the National Labor Relations Board has issued charges that Continental's production shift is illegal. Ranick says this is one possible outcome of the NLRB action.
Having to reinstate employees laid off, having to resume production, and also perhaps reimbursing employees for lost wages and benefits.
As USW negotiates for new national contracts with tire makers, it has targeted BF Goodrich Michelin in an effort to reach a pattern agreement.
All across the United States this week, the House GOP is holding forums intended to find common ground on the debate of immigration. But as shown at one heated forum in San Diego on Wednesday, common ground is not so common. Newly elected San Diego Congressman Brian Bilbray expressed a need for the Border Patrol to work harder at cracking down on undocumented workers. Los Angeles County Sheriff Lee Baca countered that rounding up illegal immigrants might prove to be more costly than what Americans are truly willing to pay.
We don't have enough prisons in America or enough local jails in America to incarcerate employers and their workers combined.
Meanwhile, immigrant worker rights supporters held their own forum down the street, where Jerry Butkowitz, Secretary Treasurer of the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Council, said immigrants who contribute to the country deserve a serious debate on reform.
When people come to this country and they are willing to work hard and they are willing to pay taxes and they're willing to abide by our laws, they are willing to contribute to our economy, they have a right to real immigration reform. They have a right to citizenship.
The National Treasury Employees Union has won an election, making it the sole union representing more than 20,000 federal workers at the Bureau of Customs and Border Protection. Workers chose NTEU over the American Federation of Government Employees. Customs and Border Protection is a division of the Department of Homeland Security. Northwest Airlines flight attendants face a bankruptcy court deadline next week that could void their contracts. The flight attendants on Thursday voted to leave their current union and go instead with representation by the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. Here's today's economic report. The U.S. is running a deficit of around $800 million a year, with foreign creditors lending $1.6 million per minute to finance it, according to the Christian Science Monitor. The bigger the deficit gets, the greater chance for a hard landing for the U.S., in which the dollar is devalued and a worldwide recession is triggered. With the dollar's value likely headed down, buying power of U.S. working families will be eroded, making it much more difficult for families to make ends meet. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Forwards, using all my breath.
hard to do talk radio when you're dancing. 21 and a half minutes before the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob. An email just flew into the mailbox from our good friend Sue on Big Coal River. She says, speaking of the war on terror in the Gazette this week, the Charleston Gazette, fine little newspaper, WVGazette.com, and they didn't pay me to say that. I mean, there's not a lot of liberal papers out there, and this one is getting less by the day. Enjoy it while it lasts. WVGazette.com, and it's a great way to keep up with the weirdness that is life in this otherwise beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place. Getting less beautiful by the day. Thank you, Don Blankenship. In the Gazette this week, there was a very small article, not even in the front section. Oh, I know, Sue, saying that the CIA has disbanded the unit that's been looking for Osama bin Laden for the past 10 years. She says, I thought he was the one we were supposed to be looking for. Well, me too. But, you know, it's awfully hard to find 6'6", rail-thin Arabs wandering around with portable kidney dialysis machines and potty chairs on wheels, in the hills and hollers of the tribal Pakistan. You know, Jesus Jiminy, they can find one mad cow in 4 million that, you know, they all look the same to me, and they can't find... But you get the idea. Yeah, I sort of let that one slide during the week. Bad me. But yeah, they disbanded. For God's sakes, they disbanded the unit that was dedicated to looking for Osama. And you know, as an added bonus, it's one of those things that you have to sort of think about. All that, you know, these stupid little, you know, oh, we caught the terrorist. He was gonna set off a firecracker in a tunnel. Dear God. And we can't even believe them anymore. You know, might there be another terrorist attack somewhere in the United States? Might it be in New York? Yes. And there is a reason for it. You know, Osama has more or less disappeared. You know, and the terrorist attacks on the U.S. stopped because, if you recall, after 9/11, Osama said, get your troops off sacred Saudi sand. And George Bush, just the same way that he put his knee pads on and got down on the floor to the Chinese over the spy plane, he did the same thing. Our troops went out of Saudi. That's why they wound up in Qatar. I mean, this isn't, you know, Bush bashing. Or Nora O'Donnell and trashing the president. It's a fact. He's a coward. He is yellow. I mean, you know, from his eyeballs to his toenails, he is yellow. And he is so scared that when Osama ostensibly said, you know, get off my land, you squatter, or I'll see you out behind the barn. Or whatever the equivalent of that is in Arabic. George did. I haven't had a problem with him since. Oh, he's blown. Some stuff is blown up in Iraq, but you know, I mean, that's how that goes. I mean, George started that. But I was about to lose my train of thought. You got to remember. Do you remember the flypaper theory? Well, we're fighting them in Iraq, so they won't. We won't have to fight them here. But even the FBI is now saying, we're kind of. I mean, if you take this to be real. We're fighting them here now. And London. And Madrid. And Bali. And, oh dear, we screwed up. You see my point. Let's go to the phones. Preston is calling from Denver. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Bob. Thanks. What you were just saying reminded me of how during the 80s, when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, car bombs started going off in Moscow. And they stopped when the Russians pulled out.
Funny, isn't it?
Yeah, we pretend to be confused as to why, you know, there's more of this terrorism going on these days.
Well, I don't think you're confused. I'm not confused. I think the great majority of the American people aren't confused. But I'm beginning to wonder. I don't know if it's in the water or in the air. Something happens to human beings inside the Beltway, Preston. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Definitely. maybe they spend too much time listening to the lobbyists from Boeing and Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. And it's amazing, speaking of hopeful signs and remaining optimistic, you know, there's often an effort in the propaganda to kind of break the will of people, of resistance and of hope. But, you know, when I see a film like Why We Fight being made, that film on the military-industrial complex,
right,
and I see its success, and I see the British military, there was a movement within the British military to get that shown to all its soldiers. I think there's a lot of hope.
There is, there. But I think we, Preston, I think we really have to be vigilant to it, and we have to be open to it, because I mean, I can tell you from my standpoint here, there are days that I just sit here at the production station with my little head in my hands,
yeah,
because I wonder, you know, what changes it? You know, all I have to do is see the Nielsen ratings.
Right, right. You know, there's a lot of instances where it does look pretty hopeless. I mean, I think a lot's going to be lost. A lot's being destroyed in the environment for sure. But today, just today, I read that the demand for organic produce is outstripping the supply.
Yes.
And that's important on a lot of levels. It's good for farmers. It's good for the environment. It also cuts down on our fossil fuel use.
It does, and it speaks to something that Michael Pollan noted this past Wednesday night. That it's a, you know, some of this is another aspect of getting off the grid.
Where did you see Michael Pollan speak?
Oh no, he was on this program.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry I missed that.
Oh, check out the Wednesday evening archive. He was on about 15 minutes into the program. We talked for a good half hour.
Fantastic. And there's a whole movement in schools these days where their teachers are showing their kids movies like Super Size Me, which is about the fast food industry and all the soda machines and all that stuff. So there's this growing consciousness in that field. And I think even regarding our foreign policy, I mean, a couple months ago I saw Noam Chomsky speaking at West Point.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing. Because you know, the fact that Lieutenant Aaron Wittada, who was also on this program, is a point of hope for me.
Yes.
You know, he was formally charged as of yesterday.
Okay.
And I don't know if you heard about it, but he was formally charged with, I mean, this just sort of made my eyes roll back in my head, but the formal charge was not respecting George Bush enough.
Wow, that's something.
I mean, I'm sort of colloquializing, but right, that's what it boiled down to.
Right, not adoring the great leader enough.
Yes, not failing to be sufficiently obsequious.
Right, right. And actually, speaking of hope, I have to say something regarding George Bush, something that he did that I think is worth giving him some credit for.
Oh, dear God. Do I need my medicine, Preston?
Maybe. Maybe you noticed this. A couple weeks ago, he signed some legislation to protect, I think, the Northwestern Islands.
Oh, yeah, the Hawaiian thing. That was hopeful, of course, but you know what my job is, Preston. It was not a week after that the United States Navy announced that their training and war game range,
oh, God,
intersected with that protected sanctuary, and the sanctuary, Preston, was protected because it is absolutely awash in whale culture. Okay?
Okay.
And the Navy said, well, you know, we're starting a 40-nation, I mean, some ungodly number, war game, you know, which is done out there for the express purpose of trying to keep the Chinese in line, because they build like 14 warships for every one that we build right now. We don't know that. But the Navy was, and it was all about hunting submarines. And they said, well, we have to use this. It's like mid-range or mid-wave sonar. And if you listen to what it sounds like, it sounds like a whale. And every time the Navy uses it, entire pods of whales beach themselves and commit suicide.
I saw that. Yeah.
And they had to go to, and they had to, the what was it, the National Natural Resources Defense Council, Sierra Club, somebody like that, had to go to court to stop the Navy.
Yeah, and I think they did get a withholding order or something like
that. Yeah, they got a temporary injunction of some sort until the thing can be fully heard.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, you know, we're like pilgrims, you know, one step forward, two steps back. But, I, you know, I appreciate your optimism.
I'm a mix, you know, I'm very pessimistic about some things, you know, and but other things, you know, it's important to keep in mind that we do have our victories here and there. And, I love what Howard Zinn said. There's a documentary about him, and for your listeners who may not be familiar with him, Howard Zinn was a World War II veteran, wrote a book called A People's History of the United States, which continues to be a top seller. They've sold over 1 million copies of that book.
That book changed my world.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I've gotten to see him speak a couple of times, videotaped him. Just a great man, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of this film about him, it's called You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train. There's a quote from him, and he said, "To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It is based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, kindness. And if we do act in however small a way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of present moments. And to live now, as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory."
It is, and it's in many ways, that old saying that living well is the best revenge. You know, a lot of people think of that in terms of, you know, eating a lot of ribeye. I think of that in terms of not bowing down and not giving up.
Likewise. And look at the examples we have from other parts of the world. I mean, people like Thich Nhat Hanh, that Buddhist monk from Vietnam.
Yes.
I mean, he saw his world just being blown apart, village after village just being decimated. And he just kept rebuilding and kept rebuilding. And now he's traveling around the world, coming here a lot, speaking, writing bestsellers, changing consciousness in a lot of ways.
Well, it can happen, Preston. It can happen, and it seems to happen more easily outside the United States, to be quite honest. And I think that is I think that's because we have been deliberately put on a work treadmill,
yeah,
where we dare not take time to think about. I had a revelatory experience today, walking through a store, and it was just madness.
Okay.
But I had to go get a couple of things. Agnes had said, you know, go to the store.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do what I'm told. And I fought this crowd, and I was just surrounded by people, and I had these little Kurt Vonnegut, Billy Pilgrim's Come Unstuck in Time kind of moments. And I just stopped my buggy and just looked around me at people. And what I saw was a mass of people that they all had their individual problems. They had their individual horrors, you know, their little moments of happiness. I saw a little pair of beautiful, probably 2-year-old, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, screaming twin girls. Two aisles away, I heard glass shatter. But just stop to take it in for a minute and just, do we know, you know, I think what I'm trying to say, Preston, is that we have been transformed, or the attempt has been made to transform us into a deliberately superficial people.
Yeah, I think Juliet Shore wrote that book called The Overworked American.
Yes.
And we work even more hours than the Japanese. And I love the model of for leisure time that Amsterdam provides. They actually have leisure time in their constitution and talk about how important it is for people to be able to rest. And
well, the very nature of the human species arises from leisure time.
Yeah.
In the archaeological record, you don't have what we classically recognize as a human being until such time as they have a little time to sit back and reflect. I mean, that's the point in the archaeological record when you start getting the mother goddess figurines.
Rhianne Eisler, The Chalice and the Blade.
Yes.
Another classic book. You know, I was in the store earlier today as well, and I was kind of soaking it all in. And I'm lucky in that I'm close to one of those Wild Oats grocery stores, you know, if they support some family farms and mm-hmm. organic farming. Another thing they do is they provide thoughtful magazines on parenting, like Mothering Magazine, which is a very progressive parenting journal, and Good Magazines for Kids. And
vicious little space program that Bush has talked about. Because I want there to be a place where the human being where human beings can reach out. We have to, you know, all of human exploration is not always pillage, plunder, and murder.
That's right.
Sometimes it's for the sake of finding something new.
That's true.
And in many ways, with the exception of the depths of the ocean, we're kind of fresh out of something new.
Yeah. Well, Bush, I think, also in a way can be a model for things we can do to restore this planet. I mean, his ranch in Crawford, I was reading in Solar Today, it's a magazine all about the solar industry, it's a model of green architecture. It has this enhanced insulation, passive solar, a geothermal heating system, and actually he also put the solar panels back on the White House. I think Laura Bush actually kind of prodded him into doing that. So
yeah, the ones that Reagan took down.
We kind of need to out Bush as like a closeted eco-wacko or something.
Rush would lose his mind.
I know. You know, it's a shame. I think Bush, you know, he really isn't in charge in so many ways. You know, he's, like so many of us, kind of wrapped in the system, and it's pushing him along, and it's forcing him to make decisions that I wonder if he'd make if he really had power.
Well, you know, there's so much that we could do a week's worth of shows, Preston, on the psychology of George W. Bush. I've mentioned it before, but all, you know, I said it once, it's kind of gross, but my heavens, can you imagine being potty trained by Barbara Bush? You know, there's stuff in there that would make Freud almost resurrect to get a chance to investigate. And you know, he had a chance, and at 60, he still has a chance to be a decent human being.
Yeah.
He hasn't been very good at it so far.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think the system makes, you know, a lot of us less decent than we would be.
Yeah.
But there are opportunities, and, you know, who knows what's going to come of it all.
Yeah, I'd like to, I mean, you mentioned, I had no idea of all the green energy going on. At the ranch.
At the Crawford Ranch. You know, his publicists, his image handlers, they're always taking pictures of him down there getting into that giant pickup truck that he has and, you know.
Yeah, and never in the golf cart, but always with a chainsaw or something destructive.
Right, right. But, it'd be great for people to know about this green architecture going on. That's a huge growing field. You know, that's another thing that we don't see on CNN talked about. And it's not like a movement where people are marching in the streets and
doing
that kind of protest. But it is an important movement of another sort where people are getting up every day, going to their workplace, and maybe they're doing blueprints for, you know, wind turbines, and other people are putting their toolkits and putting them up. It is happening. It is happening.
And, you know, it's one of the things that gratifies me about being sponsored by the Carpenters Union here in West Virginia. They're at the forefront of a lot of that, too.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, we need to be supportive of that kind of thinking.
The librarians, they're at the forefront of all these free speech battles going on. You know, that's something we can do, support our librarians. And, you know, a lot of librarians are very open to suggestions for good DVDs and good magazines, and they, you know, they need donations too, and so we can reach out to other people through libraries or through getting good progressive material into the Goodwills and to the Salvation Army.
Well, a good friend of mine is one of the most radical reference librarians you might ever meet down at the desk at the Florence Lauderdale Public Library in Alabama. And after I interviewed Greg LeRoy on this program about grassroots organizing to stop economic fraud as he puts it forward in goodjobsfirst.org, they're going to get a copy of his book, The Great American Job Scam, and start empowering people to resist these economic development boondoggles. You're absolutely right. And the thing is, like I said with Laura, we don't know from day to day or from moment to moment the good that we do.
What was that library in Alabama? What was the name of it?
The Florence Lauderdale Public Library.
Okay. I might have to send a copy of Why We Fight to them. I don't know if you've seen that documentary.
I have not seen it yet. I really, really want to.
It is transformative. It's really amazing.
Well, it would be very well received down there. The reference librarian's name is Kyle Weir, W-E-I-R.
And that was the Florence Lauderdale?
Florence Lauderdale Public Library, Florence, Alabama.
Great. I will definitely be in touch with them.
And it would be very well received down there, Preston, because there is a wonderful progressive enclave, if you can imagine in Alabama there being one. If there is one, it's in the northwest corner of Alabama.
That is great. Yeah, I love working with the libraries. In fact, I have this collection of taped lectures by Howard Zinn, Noam Chomsky, and people like that. And I've been getting them to public libraries around the country. And I got this group of about a dozen military librarians who contacted me to get this material. And they'd write me these notes like, oh, it'd be a great breath of progressive fresh air in this library of ours. We're inundated with right-wing stuff. I think there are other librarians who just get this kind of material to kind of keep an eye on social movements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like they were reading Allen Ginsberg in the 70s at West Point, just to see, you know, what was the counterculture doing? And I think within that institution, within the military even, there are a lot of us. There are a lot of progressive people.
Yes, there are.
I think a third of the soldiers identify as Republicans, a third as Democrats, and a third as independents. Where it's skewed is in the officer corps. It's like 8-1 Republicans to Democrats. That
right.
needs to change.
Well, you know, when you've got a cesspool like Colorado Springs hosting mm-hmm. the Air Force Academy, and you know, you would know that's your stomping ground more than it is mine. But you know what an ugly little right wing religion industry haven Colorado Springs is.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got direct access to the Air Force Academy, and the Air Force Academy has the religious scandals to prove it.
It's a huge problem. They did have a lawsuit brought against them for the right-wing Christian proselytizing that was going on.
Yes.
I think a Jewish cadet actually brought a lawsuit.
And a chaplain lost her job.
I remember that, yeah.
Preston, I hate to say it, but we must roll. I just looked up at the clock, and you know I'm guilty of this really badly. I've rolled right over the top of the hour news. But what a wonderful conversation. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, the news is late. I'm sorry. 50 lashes with a wet noodle for Bob.
That's okay.
Jump right in, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Quality News Network. In Chicago, President Bush held a press conference addressing questions about North Korea, Iran, and Iraq. He said that with our new anti-ballistic systems, the United States had a reasonable chance of shooting down the long-range missile North Korea fired earlier this week if it had not failed. Japan is pushing for a UN Security Council vote tomorrow to place sanctions against North Korea's missile program. This comes despite opposition from veto-wielding members China and Russia. In New York, the FBI and Homeland Security Department announced they have disrupted a terrorist network with plans to target the tunnels under the Hudson River. The key suspect was arrested by Lebanese authorities after FBI monitoring of internet chat rooms led to a break in the investigation. Two more suspects are also in custody abroad but have not been charged, according to the FBI. London is marking the one-year anniversary of the suicide terror attacks that killed 52 people. The city's police chief says that more attacks are actively being planned and that the terrorism threat has palpably increased in Britain. In Jerusalem, for the first time since the nearly two-week military incursion into the Gaza Strip began, a top Israeli official indicated that Israel may be willing to trade Palestinian prisoners for the captured 19-year-old Israeli soldier. In and around Baghdad, four bomb attacks on Sunni and Shiite mosques killed 11 worshippers today. At least 55 were injured.
A civil rights group says that white supremacists are joining the U.S. military to receive the world's best combat training. The Southern Poverty Law Center says relaxed recruiting standards have made it easier for such members to join. In Mexico, following the razor-thin victory of the conservative presidential candidate, there are fears of possible violence this weekend. His liberal opponent, who campaigned as the people's champion, is calling for his supporters to take to the streets and protest the election results. Italian news agencies are reporting that a judge has ordered Italy's former prime minister to stand trial. He is accused of fraud in connection with the sale of television rights at his family's media company. The Space Shuttle Discovery crew began transferring thousands of pounds of supplies to the International Space Station. Their mission will now be 13 days. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In June, payrolls went up by 121,000 workers, according to the Labor Department. The report also shows that the unemployment rate remained at 4.6%. In Washington on Monday, Henry Paulson, the former head of the Wall Street investment firm Goldman Sachs, will be sworn in as the new Treasury Secretary. In Detroit, GM's board of directors voted today to start exploratory discussions on a possible alliance with Nissan and Renault. The idea came from investor Kirk Kerkorian, who owns the largest stake in GM. A class action lawsuit has been filed against Singular Wireless on behalf of more than 20 million AT&T customers. They are accusing the company of nickel and diming them to pay transfer fees, sign new contracts, and buy new phones after the merger, which they say resulted in degraded service. Verizon Communications will be leaving the phone book business by the end of this year, according to a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission today. Although the organic food market only makes up 2.5% of the nation's food market, demand is now outpacing supply. New statistics show that sales of organic food are growing between 15 and 21% each year. Light sweet crude settled at $74.09 a barrel today, and near the close of Wall Street, the Dow is down 134 points. The NASDAQ is down 25 points, the S&P 500 down 9. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366.
Like I said, I ran over the news. Oh, how are we ever going to be big in mainstream radio if I can't even hit the clock? Shame on us. Oh, I don't know. Why don't we invent a new freaking radio paradigm? What do you say to that?
How about I just become stricter?
No. Well, only in our off hours can you... I like it then when you... Ooh, she hit me! One of these days we're going to have a booth and she'll be behind glass and can't do me bodily abuse like that. But no, it just a word. It so inspires me. You all do. Because, you know, if you want isolation, try the hills and hollers of West Virginia. You know, you want desperation for progressive thinking. Pop by the local car lot and talk to the guy who wants to cut funding to NASA because they're trying to disprove the existence of God. Okay? I mean, I got some, you know, I got isolation in truckloads. So, you know, what y'all do for us cannot be measured. And for that, we are grateful. And you know, we try to maintain our optimism. And you guys, it's like, yes, dear, help me here.
We're fortunate because I believe that family are those people that you pick.
Friends are the family you pick for yourself, Gertrude Stein.
It's not blood. It's who you choose to go through life with. And we choose to go through life with you all.
Yeah. And you, in turn, choose to share a little bit of yours with us. That is the beginning of grassroots organizing. That's the beginning of coalition building. That's the beginning of empowerment. And it's time for me to go to the phones because, you know, I make such a hypocrite of myself sometimes because I start talking about, you know, well, I won't keep you on hold, and then I do, and I'm sorry. Bobby, you there?
Huh. Oh, my goodness. My goodness. My friend. And you are that, are you not?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. It is funny how people mix up things. You mix things up, and that's how they get you to follow them. They just mix things up. It's like, you know, it's kind of like boot camp or whatever. They mix things up. You know, if you get them to thinking, yes, Darren, is that gunny? Yes, it is.
hey, no fair monitoring chat when you're on the line, okay?
Well, hey, I'm not moderating. I'm just saying, yes, hey, Gunny is back. Yes, I'm back. But I'm saying something, okay?
Okay.
Here it is. If you love somebody, you just love them. It isn't sex. It's just, you know, I know you and Agnes have been apart for a long time, and it's a hard. Oh, my goodness. Glenda and I have been separated many times over the years. But it's not sex that keeps you together. It's love. And that's what we all need. And we need to love each other as brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, children. We need to love each other just because we do. And then we got to, you know, kind of put it together and say, yeah, okay, people. Where are we going to go with this thing? It's nothing to do with politics. It's got to do with people.
Medicare Plan D, the prescription drug benefit that I thought was a fraud in the first place, turns out it's a bigger fraud than I thought.
Ah.
You know, holy cow. I'm kind of ashamed of myself for being so ignorant. I found out about what's being called the donut hole today. Mm-hmm. Holy cow.
Yes. Oh, holy cow. That's the funny thing. You're talking about, you said holy cow, and I thought about, the first thing that came to my mind was a place that I've been a long time ago, before I ever met Glenda. a place that most people, they just think about. It's India, and they have holy cow. Okay?
They do indeed.
And they worship cows, you know?
Yeah, some people, everybody got to worship something.
Yeah. So, hey, you know, it's funny, you know, what you just said about, you know, okay, let's just stop worshiping something and start thinking about where we're going to go with this thing. I mean, we finally got a push start. Maybe somebody pushed us in. Maybe it was Bush that pushed us into it. But we, the people, have to, not me, but we, all of us have to step outside of ourselves, get into a different mode. It's kind of like, it's like taking people through boot camp and then after boot camp taking them into field training and or taking them into the training that we did when we were going into the Forest Recon. It's the same difference. You have to step outside yourself. great job. You really are. But
well, you know, the wonderful thing about all this, Bob, is that it feels completely natural.
Yes.
This is truly becoming what I dreamed it would be. This really is turning into conversation radio.
Okay. Then you've got the point. And you are on the point. You're the guy on the point. You're the tip of the spear, boy. You're going to take us through that.
Yeah, and I got a rubber bayonet, you know, but, you know.
But it may be rubber, but it's a bayonet, okay? But you, excuse me, I'm going down fast, but I'm going down, but I ain't going down that easy, okay? But listen, okay? Remember the brothers Sullivan, okay?
Yes.
Remember the brothers Sullivan.
Absolutely.
They went down in a war many years ago. I mean, we're talking 60, what, some years ago. They went down in World War II with the brothers Sullivan. They forced the United States government to separate brothers from serving in the same unit. Okay? Now it's time that all of us, I mean, I'm talking to people in the chat room. I thank God that I finally got back into it. But I'm trying to say something here that when I was in Vietnam, the men that I served with were my brothers. And many of them, I put many, I mean many of them, 50% of my battalion went home in body bags.
Jesus.
And, no, 50%. No, if you go back and look at the combat Marines that served in the combat Marines. I'm not talking about the Marines that served as, telegraphers or whatever they did. I'm talking about the guys that served in combat. 50% of us went back home in body bags. And of that, you know, like there was a certain percent of us that didn't go home in body bags. And that was in Vietnam. And now they're toting Vietnam as a big win? No, it was a loss. We lost.
Yeah. And the thing that I mentioned early on talking with Andy this evening, Bob, we are, in screwing around with Iran the way we are putting the troops that we have on the ground in Iraq at greater risk than we even imagined. Dien Bien Phu is going to look like a day at the races.
Mm-hmm.
Because literally,
well, you're talking about
a million Iranians could pour across the border.
You said Dien Bien Phu, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you said Dien Bien Phu, but that was the French.
That
was
yeah.
The French trying to recolonize Vietnam.
That was the French getting their ass handed to them.
Yeah. But that was Dien Bien Phu. Now, I'm going to talk to you about Khe Sanh.
Yeah, Khe Sanh, Hue.
Dien.
And the thing is, the screw up that is in the boring in the minds of the psychos and the sociopaths in the Pentagon, Bob, it's going to make Hue and Khe Sanh and Da Nang look like nothing.
Hey, you want to talk about Hue?
No, I don't want to talk about Hue. I want to talk about what we're about to do to a bunch of guys who are serving in good faith in the middle of the desert.
Here, let's talk about the truth. I mean. Let's talk about what they're doing to our United States Marine Corps, what they're doing to our United States Army, and what they're doing to our United States Navy and Air Force and our Coast Guard. Let's talk about...
Yeah, they're doing things, Bob, that it's going to take 15 to 20 years at least to correct, if possible.
They cannot correct the... They cannot correct what they've done. It's like, okay, I really do. I remember what was on your first, head-on radio network thing where they talked about Bob with the two left feet. He had a right foot and left foot, but he only got two left shoes. And I remember you being left in the left part of the building, but you never went to the right. You always turned to the left. You know, I remember that, Bob. You know why I remember that? Because I was brought up in a right family. I mean, it was a Republican family, and it was very, very right wing. Very right wing. And I went out to Vietnam because my mother's, my father's, my sister's, my father, my mother, my sister, everybody, hey, boy, they pounded me on the back when I went off in 1967 to Vietnam. They pounded me on the back and go get them commies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? When I got there, I found people that were, you know, I couldn't understand why the hell we were there. And it's like...
Yeah, but you did your job anyway, and that, you know...
Well,
that,
no, I survived, Bob. I did what I had to do. And
Bob, if you had not done your job, the people who came home alive under your under your leadership would not have come home.
It doesn't matter, Bob, because none of us had a reason for really being there. That's the problem.
Any more than the guys in the desert today have a reason for being there.
Good God, Bob. This is the problem. You know, everybody's pounding everybody in the back, waving flags. You know, hey, everybody's afraid to burn a flag. Everybody's afraid to just stand up and say, enough is enough. And Vietnam was enough. And they promised me after that there would be no more Vietnam. And guess what, Bob? You are deep, deep, deep into another Vietnam. And everybody, I love these people. I love the people. I love Nan. I love Bob Kincaid. Hello. Hello, I love her. I just do. But the thing is, you got to listen. If you keep digging deeper, it's kind of like this thing Bush is digging. It's a deep hole. He just keeps shoveling out the dirt. And he keeps looking for a bottom. There's no bottom to this thing, Bob. The only thing you're going to get is a lot of graves, a lot of dead soldiers.
Well, and that's the point that I've made on a number of occasions, Bob. If you look at the first two or three years of Vietnam as compared to the first two or three years of Iraq, the death toll is a lot higher from Iraq. We are nationally horrified that 55,000 young men and some women were lost for no reason at all in Vietnam. Give us 10 years of Iraq, and you know we won't have room anywhere in Washington D.C. for the monument we're going to have to build already. And 55,000 is going to look like.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you.
And I'm not willing to sit passively by, Bob, while we make plans for a monument with 100,000 names.
No, I'm not either. I've been fighting this dang thing since day one. Before that pig-headed punk, that monkey, that
jug-eared lout.
Huh?
Jug-eared lout?
Oh, I was thinking of one of them things that hang upside down from a tree and wait for you to shoot them.
Stop it.
Okay, well, okay, just one of them old possums or something like that. I was thinking, this thing is just ugly, and the people that voted him into office, I don't think there were that many that did, but these people are just filthy, Bob. They're filthy. They're filthy animals. And it's time that we extricate them. It's kind of like, in the morning, after I'm, you know, I've slept in the evening, I get up in the morning, I go to the commode, and I just...
Family radio show, Bob.
Okay. We dump out our excrement, and hey, there might be a bush that comes out in the morning. And if he's got the nard, Bob, to come see me.
But he ain't gonna, Bob, any more than he's gonna do an interview with me. We got to wrap it up, brother, because I got people online.
I know it.
All right.
I'd love to hear you.
Good to talk to you again. No, it is. It is. All right.
I'm not much of nothing.
Yeah, you are. But, Bob, we got to go, brother.
Well, go then.
All right, we're going. She's got the skillet out, Bob.
I'm waiting for the click when Agnes says, hey, enough.
All right.
Enough.
All right, there it is.
Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend, Bob.
You too, son.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, we come back after the break. We do more phone calls. I'm Bob. This is Head On.
Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so...
Oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway... Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
I'm back. During the break, did you go somewhere? Maybe you're back. Any way you slice it, we're into the home stretch of this Friday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and a reminder, it does not, you know, just because this thing ends at in a little less than a half an hour doesn't mean it's all over, because after all, tomorrow night, there will be a rerun, I believe, of Cup of Joe with Joe Vecchio, followed by a brand new live Fourth Estate Radio with Bruce Birch and John Fox.
Yes.
And yes. See, Agnes got the night off last week, and she's excited to be back at it now. But a new Fourth Estate Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, Saturday evening. Be there. Aloha. Book 'em, Dano. Let's go to the phones. David is with us from Middle Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Bob. I've got some late-breaking news. I just picked up off a wonderful new wire service that I'm a subscriber to. But before I tell you about that, on a more serious note, I think the historical parallel from a military standpoint that you might want to latch on to about if we manage to cause the Iranians to get interested in our troops in Iraq, you've got no further to look than the Korean conflict, when we thought we were really hot stuff until 600,000, I think, the first wave of red Chinese.
Chosen Reservoir.
Cha-ching, we have a winner.
I thought you were going to say Little Bighorn.
Nope. Because there is a large functioning army in Iran. There was a large functioning army in Red China at the time. Well, there still is. And when we thought we were doing so well against the North Koreans above the 38th parallel, and we decided we had it all figured out, here they came. And we found out just what dedicated troops could do when they were on territory that was very much like theirs, and they were very close to home, and they really had an interest in coming out on top, and they were motivated ideologically, et cetera, et cetera. And there's one other really, really difficult to speak about sidebar. What we learned about prisoner of war internment from the Chinese communists during the Korean War made some of the things that happened to our troops at the hands of the Nazis pale.
Yes.
Comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not predicting.
How well will ours be treated by the Iranians?
Well, you know, that's the point where you look at Georgia and you say, hey, that whole abrogating the Geneva Conventions thing, how's that working out for you, George?
Yeah, what? You had 250 headless bodies dumped in a ditch somewhere that we could find them? Oh, yeah, George, how's that working out for you? And they, you know, they stuff the dog tags in the uniform pocket? Right. Yeah, that would go over great. But on a lighter note, it really is wonderful.
Thank God.
That the phenomenon of people having an interest in organic foods is really taken off. And right now, the guys that are growing and producing and dealing in and distributing organic foods, that the supply is outstripping the demand. And Bob, based on this news service that I've subscribed to, it is taking off and it's becoming very important. Because according to this news service, Halliburton has a new natural foods division that they're working on. And on top of that, President Bush has Jeff Sessions working on a clarifying organic foods labeling law. So, hey, there's good times just around the corner, Bob.
Oh, see, I must be tired at the end of the week, David, because I'm sitting here struggling. You know, Kellogg Brown and Rootstock.
There you go. Yeah, they're going to...
A little Oslay on the uptake. Hey.
Well, just like they've kept Dick Cheney alive several years past his past.
Now, that ain't organic.
No, but
that's better living through chemistry, David.
They're going to bring Yul Gibbons back to life as a spokesman.
Did you ever eat a stop sign? Some parts are edible.
Yeah, eating the pine cone's tough on you. Oh, but seriously, you wait and see. In about 2 years, there'll be this big breaking news about some company that's selling, you know, what?
Well, see, but what I love about all this, David, is, okay, shameless horn tooting here. We're ahead of the curve again. This story came out today. Michael Pollan was on this show Wednesday evening, you know, talking about what he had found in writing his book, The Omnivore's Dilemma. And he said, you're going to see an explosion in organic farming. He said, Walmart's getting into it, but then he very cautiously said, what scares me about Walmart getting into organic farming is that I have a sneaking suspicion the organic farms are going to be in China, and I don't trust what's in the dirt there.
Or the air, or the water.
Right, because, you know, you dovetail that with, what's his name, I can't remember, a recent book called Big Coal. And he talks about the fact that if you go and you tour China, you will see coal piled up on the street because the entire economy is running on coal right now. And they're pumping. I saw one excerpt, David, where he said that climatologists or meteorologists, someologists, had tracked on satellite a cloud of just coal filth that they saw it impact the Hawaiian Islands. It had come from China. It impacted the Hawaiian Islands. They tracked it into the United States.
70%. 70-plus percent of China's energy usage is coal. Coal they dig themselves. China has the dirtiest coal supply in terms of sulfur content on the face of the earth. That fact. They have also figured out, U.S. Coastal and Geological has figured out that 25% of the mercury in Lake Michigan had its origin in dirty energy production from China. 25% of the mercury in the fish in the Great Lakes.
75% was thanks to Don Blankenship.
Problem. Well, yeah, but, hey, it's a ways from the shores of Lake Michigan to Beijing.
Oh, that's the truth. And the thing is, it's not, and what we don't understand is, and because we are so, so far removed from it, David, most people within the sound of my voice right now, and I know Nanette in the chat room does know, most people in the sound of my voice don't know what a clinker is. Because we are far removed from the home burning of coal. China is not. You know, you buy a grilled skewer of whatever on the streets, it's grilled over coal chunks.
Well, I don't know if it's directly over it, but I do know that as a 7-year-old, my first quarter that I could earn was going down there and dealing with clinkers in the basement. And I remember my father, in his inimitable way, said in such a way that I thought was serious, that when I came up with my hands cut to ribbons because I didn't understand how to deal with clinkers, that I got a quarter for getting the clinkers into the bucket and hauling them where they needed to go, but he was going to charge me a nickel apiece for Band-Aid. It took my mother 48 hours to get me over that one.
and you know, God knows, you know, 40 years later, a couple of $1,000 in therapy.
No, I just drink.
Well, you know, that save your money. I mean, that's why all that good stuff, that's why all that wonderful water filters through those limestone tables in Tennessee.
Well, there's a wonderful spot in Lynchburg, Tennessee called a spring, and those boys down there told me they couldn't make it without the spring. So,
charcoal filtered group psychology.
You got it. And you know what?
In little short glasses.
You don't get to dance and listen to loud music. You go the therapy route.
Yeah, right.
So there's, you know, there's trade-offs. There's benefits.
No, that's true, but you know, we make light, but all of this, there's so much truth in it. And you know what? You're not kidding. If organic becomes profitable enough, if Walmart's already involved.
Well, the magic word is that the supply has been outstripped by the demand.
Yes.
In business, in capitalism, in the underlying.
That means there's a buck to be made.
the underlying operating system, just like DOS is under all those cute little icons that you see on your screen, the underlying operating system is greed. Oh, wait a second.
Now, wait a minute. You're going to make the Mac people mad.
Sorry about that, Mac people. I'm just a PC guy. But anyway, you know, if there's a shortage in the marketplace, Irving's talking to Fred, and Fred is going to the bank to get money from Sid, and they're going to figure out a way to fill a void. If the market pulls, somebody will produce something. Just because they have to lie to, you know, get it into the right market.
Well, but the, and but you know, I cannot encourage and I don't beat on books like I've beaten on The Omnivore's Dilemma. I cannot encourage strongly enough that people should read this book. Because, you know, the section one on the industrial food chain, you know, the corn, the feedlots, but the other thing is, and it's something that progressives have to guard against and be wary of and be vigilant about, is the perversion of the organic food chain. And that's exactly what you're talking about right now, David.
Big money will corrupt that. Big money will corrupt that. I offer his example going all the way back to the 70s. People that wanted to sell more beer decided if they put chemicals and they shortened the cycle time from start to finish by 6 or 7 days, a brewery could be 25% bigger. And they tried a small batch. And the guys at Schlitz were told, this tastes like something you should flush radiators with. And the marketing guys said, No, we'll up the ad budget and tell everybody to serve it colder. We can all become bazillionaires if we just add chemicals and cut 5 working days out of the cycle. They did, and Schlitz went out of business. But the marketing guy got a big raise for the idea. They'll try anything to make a fast buck.
1985, new Coke.
Exactly.
New Pepsi-flavored Coke.
Oh, now you got Coke Black, Block, whatever that is in those things.
I know. Covered. I personally think they're getting it from a sludge impoundment somewhere in southern West Virginia. It's awful.
It's got a kick to it.
I brought one to Agnes, and, you know, she didn't sleep for a week.
If you've ever been to a small mechanic shop somewhere where they don't really clean up at night and use that horrible cleaner to, you know, get the stuff off the floor.
I know it well.
They've drained a radiator or drained a rear end. I'm sorry.
Coca-Cola Black.
If you look at the graphics on the side of it, it looks like that mixture of rusty water and 90-weight gear lube that's been run for 100,000 miles.
You're so right. You know, but again, that's indicia of so much of the rotten crap that goes on in this consumer culture. I was talking about the people wandering around inside the store today who, you know, I didn't know if they knew where they were. If you know what I mean, and they're getting, and they're just we're under a barrage of, you know, buy this, consume that, you know, not just Coca-Cola Black. Were you paying attention when Budweiser introduced those little short bottles of Bud with the caffeine in it? Wide awake drunks. Never mind the black coffee.
No, not wide awake. Nervous drunk.
Nervous. Need to go for a drive.
They'll do anything, but. Those folks you saw in the store, that's serious business, Bob, because you're exactly right. And no, they didn't know where they were. They didn't know what they were doing. For 2 to 3 seconds at a crack, they were so overwhelmed. They were the rat in the maze that was dealing with sensory overload.
Yeah, and see, I see those people, and it breaks my heart, David.
And the only way they came out of it was when the phone rang and the 11-year-old at home watching the 9-year-old tear the furniture apart said, don't forget to get my tennis shoes.
Oh, God. But you're so, you know, yeah. And I don't know, you know, is there, would it be good to break this? Am I just being an elitist liberal, you know, liberal elitist limousine riding, you know, brie eating snob? Or would there be a benefit, you know, to a more examined existence? I mean, most of the people I saw in the store today were probably good people. You know, did they understand that the clothing that they bought from Myanmar? Did they understand that that was keeping a worker in Chicago away from the mill, or you know, in the deep south? Does it go that far?
Bob, I think for a variety of reasons, that sensory overload, the advertising campaigns, the fact that they've been convinced by some group of people for some horrid reason that, you know, the average square footage on a house these days is 2,500 square feet. The average square footage on a house 50 years ago was 1,100 square feet.
Trust me, I know. I've got the house from 70 years ago. We don't have closets.
So do I. But they've been convinced that they have to do and be and all of this stuff, and they've got to be striving for the 3,500 square foot house. And to do that, they've got to buy those shirts and those tennis shoes that...
But the whole time they're buying those things, that makes it a little less likely that's ever going to happen.
They can't think that far because our educational system has been dumbed down. You've heard me get all just incredibly soapboxed about an undereducated nation. And George Bush and the people around him want a nation that has 1% or 2% at the top that can function mentally, and the rest of them, all they can do is respond to advertising once they've turned on the television, whether it be driven by Karl Rove or Coke or Tommy Hilfiger.
That's depressing.
They don't want thinkers.
And I keep coming back to that kid, at Gallatin High School, who was railing against precisely this.
Right. And he wanted to speak about it as a valedictorian, or was he salutatorian?
No, well, he was neither, because they elected it. He was the smartest kid in the whole darn school.
No, they elected who the speaker
was. They elected the speaker, but he was the valedictorian with a 4.5 on a 4.0 scale. Yeah, that kid.
He had something like 3/4 of a point more than a 4-point in a 4-point system. He was the valedictorian of the school. He wanted to speak. They wouldn't let him because typically by tradition, the popularity contest elected student body president, probably a member of the Young
Republicans. Yeah, and I mean, I saw the interview. He wanted to talk about this consumer-driven eat, drink, and be married for tomorrow we die culture. But, you know, he's 18 years old, and you elect the handsomest boy in school to speak at graduation at Gallatin High School.
And it really was a very good point where you said the only radicals left are 60 years old. There's no radicals. There's no thinkers. There's no kids in the street.
Hey, thanks from a 43-year-old's perspective.
43. I think I can remember being 43.
Yeah. I know. But no, I mean, I was right and you're right. You know, there was a time when you and Wayne talked about, you know, we're here, we'll teach you how to do it. You know, talking to my generation. But my generation is too busy at Kmart and Target and Walmart and Costco and Sam's Club and Kroger's and... You know.
There's nobody at home. There's nobody with a minute to spare.
There's no existing counterculture.
You know, we've experienced union breaking. There's so many fewer... Gosh, I don't even want to think about how rare it would be for a man with incredible work habits that had been through a 2-year training program, whether it's OJT or it's a union apprenticeship or whatever it may be, how likely is it going to be that you could find a whole neighborhood of that guy whose wife stays at home to raise children, and they can own a very livable home and a car every 3 years, maybe 2, based on just the guy working?
Yeah, that's a gone America, and I think the $64 question, David, is, you know, is it gone for good, or can it be recovered? You know, do we have the undo button on the American program?
Boy, I don't know. Well, it's going to have to be a remake. It's going to have to be a start from scratch and create something. No, we can't go back. That vehicle has no reverse on it. You're not going to back that stuff up. You're just going to have to...
Can't back up to the American dream. It has to be rebuilt from the ground up.
You're exactly right. And it starts with the 06.
Jesus, that's frightening, David.
And it starts with the 06 election.
All right, David, I need to run on. I'm going to try to squeeze two more phone calls in the next 6 minutes and 10 seconds.
Let me get out of the way. Thanks for letting me rant. Have a great day.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a wonderful weekend.
I shall. You too.
Luke is with us. Hey, Luke, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bob. I sat and read the transcript last night of Operation Beach Ball, or what they call Larry King Almost Live.
Larry King. Welcome to Larry King Embalmed.
Well,
you know, I used to do that for a living.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It was sort of like, this wasn't even softball time. I heard one of the guys up on, I think it was Washington Post, said this was beach ball time. Said it was so big, you could take a swing at it, if you missed, don't worry, you'd come right back.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, God. You just have to wonder, you pray that somewhere in the CNN office or somebody was down there just screaming at the TV.
But they're not. They're not. I mean, I worked with a bunch of those guys. They're gone. I'm sorry. I'm in my downer phase, Luke.
Well, I understand. Here's one of those things. It's like, and I heard, I didn't get to listen to all the show tonight, but I'm sure you talked about Ms. O'Donnell last night.
No, we ran the thing in entirety.
Oh, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, after this whole thing with the New York Times, I still say you have to protect the press. But right now, I've been reading Eric Altman's What Liberal Media Again. And I have it in the car, so when I go, you know, if I get stuck in traffic, I can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I open it up to either the 2000 election or the 9/11, and I read about a page, and I put it down and scream for a minute, and then I pick it up and I read another page, and put it down, and scream a little bit longer.
Well, I think so much of what we talk about, Luke, is reframing, and in this instance, the reframing we have to do has something to do with stop referring with refusing to refer to people like Nora O'Donnell as journalists.
Well, you know, it's like they say, it's the SCLM, the so-called liberal media.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look, I do what I do every night, Luke, and you know, I've done journalism. I have adhered to the strict rules and had the whip cracked over my head of neutrality and unbiasedness, and I tried to hang on to it for dear life. I have done that. Now, I don't hold what I do here every night to be journalism because, A, I'm not a liar, and, B, I refuse to perpetrate a fraud upon the most important people out there, namely, you know, listeners.
Yeah.
This ain't journalism. And the thing, the only thing, you know, I sent an email off to, like, viewerservices@msnbc.com or something. I said, look, yeah, that was nice. I said, just do us a little favor. And please don't try to pass Chris Matthews and Nora O'Donnell off as journalism.
It's sort of like, well, if this is going to be the Abrams regime, it's sort of like, you know, other than Oberman, I'm just going to quit watching anything on MSNBC.
You know, I Luke, honest to God, I just wish I wasn't so homely. You know, I'd love to go out there and do journalism on TV, but no. The camera adds like 122 pounds to me. It's just bad.
And you just fear, and you just know that somebody's going to say, "I thought I saw him on America's Most Wanted, didn't I?" You know.